high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be across all these many prolific time zones, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west, exotic territory, to the Caribbean, more exotic territory, the U.S. Virgin Islands, everything in between, south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning. It is going to be an interesting night. My guests are going to be Sean David Morton, who is, you know, I'll let him describe himself here in a moment, but he's an investigator. He is a prophet. He is a fascinating individual who knows a lot about Area 51. Now, that's going to lead directly into sort of a joint interview of Victor, the mysterious Victor. Victor allegedly smuggled a video out of Area 51, no small feat, of an interrogation. I wonder if that's the right question. Either it was an interview or an interrogation. According to Whitley Strieber, who saw the entire video, it was a not very gentle interrogation of this alien. Now, we put one photograph on our website, I don't know, a month or two ago, and they promised an interview with Victor, and that'll be at midnight. And then they sent a second photograph, which we have on my website right now. So, if ever you, if you've been procrastinating and have not yet seen this photograph, I suggest you take a look. We will describe both photographs for you as best we're able prior to the interview with Victor, because I know that not all of you have computers and can get on the internet. But for those of you that are able to, you better get up there right now. It is www.artbell.com. www.artbell.com. And you will prominently see the link that takes you to the alien photographs. Snappied, if you will, from a three-minute piece of footage smuggled out of Area 51. And so we will try and divine what we are able to from Victor about the mysterious Area 51, about the alien. We will divine what we can from Sean Morton about the status of Area 51, because there is an article out now that would seem to suggest Area 51 has moved. I certainly don't see evidence of that. But there is an article. So we'll be underway in just a moment here. All right, now, I said he was an investigator and a prophet. Is that about right, Sean?
Yes, that would be right. Yes,
that'd be about right.
And the reason I would use the term prophet specifically is because originally the Old Testament said that it meant teacher of righteousness. So I didn't want people to think I have a big head about that.
All right. Is it reasonable to ask you how you divine the information that you have?
Quite specifically, I had a natural talent and gift and ability from when I was very, very young. Matter of fact, the first manifestation of it was when I started having these terrible dreams about a good friend of ours, Gus Grissom, who was one of the original Mercury astronauts. And my parents were a little freaked out about the fact that I kept seeing Gus trapped and choking, and then kept seeing fire around his head. And then, of course, he was burned up in a ground test of one of the original Apollos.
Yes.
Later on, I spent a year in a Tibetan monastery in a place called Tangbache, which is just down from Mount Everest, just across the Tibetan border in Nepal, and learned how to hone these talents and abilities. And then when I got back, I worked for quite a few years actually as a psychic counselor on a number of hotlines. I actually stopped doing private readings for people because all anybody ever wanted to know about was sex and money. So it was all where's my money and where's my honey? When do I get laid and when do I get paid?
Yep.
And I thought that the planet was going through substantial changes, and I saw major breakthroughs in consciousness and changes in the Earth's climate and various other things around the world. And so back in 1993, I started publishing my newsletter, the Delphi Associates newsletter. And one of the main reasons I was publishing it was because so many other people were saying that California was going to fall into the ocean and that there would be massive quakes and that Colorado would be the new West Coast by 1998. And that wasn't what I was seeing at all. As a matter of fact, I live in California in Hermosa Beach, which is where I published the newsletter out of. And I was seeing, I predicted the Northridge quake many months in advance. I gave an exact location. I gave an exact, I only missed the date by about 10 days or so.
You're sure it's not wishful viewing?
No. Because I
mean, because you're there.
Because because I'm here and because I'm sensitive to the phenomenon, it actually physically manifests in my body. And I work with a number of maps. I actually do meditations in front of the maps and feel energy actually coming off of the maps, and then I can actually focus in and get a pretty good idea of a time frame and a window as to when major events are going to occur. And this is what allowed me to predict the San Francisco quake back in 1989 and the Northridge quake and give, actually I've been pretty right on, exact dates on a large number of quakes and various political events and occurrences.
Well, I know your hits are really good, and that's what I wonder about. How do you know? I mean, how, for example, do you call the Northridge quake? How do you know it's coming? What do you see?
When I was working on the map specifically, and the Northridge quake was very unusual in the form of when I work with the map and I project forward and I'll get the energy actually coming out of a location, mm-hmm. I will then see the energy and then I'll take it forward. And very simply, for anybody that wants to do this that's sensitive to the phenomenon, you take it from the date where you're at, let's say it's May, and then go June, July, August, September, and then you'll get a hit on the month, and then I'll try to actually narrow it down by going through the dates. And how Earth energy actually works, or how I feel it, is it builds up to a crescendo, to a plateau of where the energy is coming out of a certain point, and then it will peak down the other side. Now, Northridge was very, very unusual because what I got was like an upright spike. To me, the Northridge quake looked like a bomb exploding. I mean, it was like it didn't have a plateau like most of the other quakes do. Usually you can actually project it and it'll have a window,
sure,
period or occurrence. And this one went straight up and down, almost as if the quake was somehow artificial. I mean, almost like if it was a bomb going off.
Huh.
And one of the ways that I pinpointed the quake was, I pinpointed the quake specifically because I tracked down where extra low frequency wave towers were, specifically in Beatty, Nevada, Moffett Field, and Edwards Air Force Base. And then I was just playing around with a map, and I drew concentric circles out from that, thinking, well, if I was going to induce a quake to relieve pressure on the San Andreas Fault, how would I do it, where would I do it from, and where would it hit? And by drawing these circles out, I came up with three locations.
You're telling me you think that quake was induced by man to relieve a pressure on the San Andreas?
There is a body of evidence to support that opinion, yes. That, in
wow.
fact, the Northridge quake jumped because most of the pressure was actually building on the San Andreas Fault in Palmdale.
All right, then the next obvious question is, if that would be true, and if they knew where the quake would be and the magnitude of the quake, why wouldn't they have at least gone out on a public limb and warned the people of Northridge?
The only way I can view it is that I had several friends of mine who were paramedics who called me 10 to 8 days before the quake actually happened.
Yes.
And said, we don't know what's going on with the county, but they're spending $50,000 to $75,000 keeping the choppers up in the air. We're on what they call 12-12 call, where they go up for 12, they're working for 12 hours and then are off for 12 hours. And I got a whole number of people calling me saying, look, we don't know what's going on, but the county has actually declared an emergency many days before the quake actually happened. It was very interesting, the date of the
really?
Quake when it occurred, because it was actually January 17th, which was Martin Luther King Day, which actually then would subside the possibility of maybe rioting or looting in certain sections of Los Angeles. And the other aspect of this was that directly after the quake, you had about 100,000 people outside with no water and no power, and they began spraying them with Malathion. I mean, literally, the morning after the quake, and it was raining. And if you actually spray a population with Malathion and you mix Malathion with water, you get malathioxin, which is actually Agent Orange. It's actually a suppressant. So All I can tell you is that what I saw originally was that the quake was somehow artificially induced. The Camarillo fault, which ruptured...
Oh, wait a minute. I don't understand. Why spray them? To what end? And Agent Orange was a defoliant.
It's a defoliant, but it can also be used as a depressant. And if you spray it on an entire population of people, specifically, it keeps them from acting up.
So now you're suggesting that in order to quiet them, calm them, prevent a riot, they were sprayed.
With the helicopters over the populations that were outdoors, yes.
Wow.
So, specifically, what I saw was somehow a quake being artificially induced, and many months before that, that's how I figured out, I pinpointed where I thought it would be, because the Camarillo fault, which was only discovered about 8 months before the Northridge quake went off, tridents out off the coast, and then the Navy began to set off a large number of explosive devices to test their stealth submarine, which is called the Sea Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sea Shadow, they were putting actually 200,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate at the end of this fault line, and they were exploding it, with the Sea Shadow coming down into the crevices, claiming that it was a test to see how the Sea Shadow would actually function under atomic warfare conditions. So that was the end of the Camarillo fault line, which they were messing with, which the Navy was setting off these explosions on. The next thing they were doing was, if you remember, that the United States Geological Survey, about a year before that, began to work with the U.S. Navy. Now, I became sort of suspicious of this, because how could, if the United States Geological Survey is in bed with the military doesn't do things altruistically. They're in for it for power, information, or control. And it's my opinion that I think what was happening is that the USGS and the Navy got together and said, look, there's the good possibility that we could have a fracturing 8.6 to up to a 9 quake, and California could indeed fall into the ocean, as many people were feeling, and we have to do something to relieve that pressure, and that maybe Northridge was actually triggered as some sort of controlled role. And the evidence actually that I have of this is the USGS and the Navy actually teaming up a whole series of explosions along the Camarillo fault line at the very end of it.
I seem to remember some publicity about that, wasn't there?
There was announcements in the paper that the USGS and the Navy were specifically bearing a series of charges from directly off the coast all the way up to China Lake and then all the way back down to the Landers Fault, and they were exploding these charges in two-minute intervals to specifically create a shockwave. And this was, and in my newsletter in August, I kept saying, look, what I'm feeling is that this quake is somehow artificially induced. And Northridge was very strange, by the way, because the exact epicenter of Northridge was actually about a 9.2. But every quake that has an epicenter that then goes outwards, almost like you're dropping a bomb and then the epicenter goes out. But that's not what happened with Northridge, because you had all these various landmasses fracturing. Because you had literally a chunk of the valley jump about 6 feet in the air, nullifying the force of gravity and moving in the exact opposite direction of the fault line itself. What they did is that when the Federal Emergency Management Agency came in, they specifically had to judge the earthquake by zip codes, because even though you had a 9.2 at the epicenter, 2 miles away it was a 6, and 4 miles away it was a 5, and then underneath the Santa Monica Mountains you had 4s right next to a 6. So it was a very, very odd, very, very strange quake.
Is there any evidence that it actually relieved tension on the San Andreas?
According to Caltech, it did. That it actually jumped and relieved pressure specifically on Palmdale. And the other strange thing about it is that every other geological service in the world, the Japanese, the Germans, everybody, had the Northridge quake at least a 7.2. I think the Japanese had it as high as almost a 7.5. And the USGS is the only major earthquake service that had that quake at below a 7. And the reason for that is that directly after the Loma Prieta quake in San Francisco in October of 1989, they passed what was called the California Earthquake Management Relief Act. And in this act, it said that if you lived within a 30-mile radius of an earthquake that was 7.0 or better, that you did not have to pay state or federal property or income taxes for that year. That was part of the earthquake relief package, that you got a tax-free ride in order to rebuild your home. So, of course, they pulled the quake down to a 6.8 so that the insurance wouldn't kick in at a 7 and so that they could still collect the tax revenues in Los Angeles.
That's incredible.
So that was one of the big hits.
Well, what is not deniable is that you called it.
And called an epicenter and called a magnitude. Now, whether or not my theory is correct as to how the quake was actually induced, I'm not sure. As I said, there's a body of evidence to support that it's conceivably artificial.
But you would admit that that portion of it is opinion?
Yes.
As a point, as a delineated from the way you divined the quake was going to occur and where and when and magnitude.
Correct, because it was directly in line with where the extra low frequency wave towers actually met up. The other location, three locations, Vallejo in Northern California, there hasn't been a big quake there yet, Northridge, and the third one was Flagstaff, Arizona. And if you remember, before the Northridge quake, about 6 months before, there was about a 5.6 earthquake in Flagstaff. And I thought, well, this is interesting. It's interesting that all these quakes seem to be happening right at where these particular lines head up.
All right. So, look, I want to talk to you about Victor. I want to talk to you about these photographs ahead of Victor's appearance. And then when Victor is gone, I want to talk to you generally about Earth changes. I don't suppose you happened to hear Stan Dale on the show the other night.
No, but I've read Stan's material, and I'm very familiar with it.
Well, he is showing some remarkably scary blooming from these naval photographs, weather photographs. Pretty scary stuff, and it looks like there's something pretty weird ahead. So we'll talk about that, too. Stay right there. Sean David Morton is my guest. Victor coming up.
Toll free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
That's who we are. Top of the morning, everybody. Sean David Morton is here. I'm Art Bell. Coming up in about 25 minutes, the mysterious Victor. Victor will be using a voice changer, and we're depending on him to call us. So, I'm not guaranteeing anything. This is free-flowing, a spontaneous talk radio, and I don't know what's going to happen tonight. All right, Sean, we will come back to Earth changes and such, but...
Okay, Art?
Yes.
We have a bit of a problem. I've got Victor and his crew on the other line, and apparently they got the wrong number from you to call in. So I don't know how we're going to work this, but he's on the other line right now.
I wonder how they managed to do that, because I sent that number to them any number of times. I'll tell you what, I don't want to give it to you. I don't want to give it out publicly on the air,
right,
or it would be a disaster.
No, I understand.
So
that's why I'm saying, you know, I don't know how we work this week, because I have Jeff Broadstreet actually on the other line, so we got to give him a number for him to get in touch with you at midnight.
I can do that. Let me see here. Let me see how I'm going to do that. I see how I'm going to do that. All right. What I want you to do is stand by on the line for a moment, and I'll come to you privately, all right?
All right.
Stay right there. In today's world of shaky currencies, massive borrowing, and higher interest rates, it might be time to get a little old-fashioned with your money. Time to buy gold. Most investors know that gold is a good investment during times of inflation. Actually, gold is a hedge against all forms of economic uncertainty. Gold's value went up 800% during the inflationary 70s, 15% during the market crash of 87, and 70% during the Great Depression. The Swiss refer to gold as the ultimate currency, since it retains its purchasing power when all else fails. Eventually, all paper currencies inflate and fail. Even the celebrated Swiss franc has lost over 50% of its buying power since 1945. No paper currency is immune. Gold, on the other hand, will buy everything today that it bought 20, 50, even 100 years ago. So, if you're uncomfortable about the ever-growing government debt, perpetual deficits, rising taxes, and their effect on your personal net worth, it's time to face facts. Call North American Trading at 1-800-359-4255 and ask for their free information on buying gold safely and privately. Remember, 1-800-359-4255. North American Trading, America's trusted name in private hard assets. You don't have to be rich to own gold, just smart.
All right. Back now, I think, to Sean David Morton. Sean?
I'm here.
We have transferred the proper number to them.
They just got a digit transposed is what happened.
All it takes.
A 7 looked like a 1 apparently looked like a 7.
So I see. All right.
Now what's happening is that Jeff had to come back to the office to call me to get the right number, so now he's rushing back to another location. So they're going to try to call you at, they might be a few minutes late. So we can actually talk about, what's going on with this, and I think the buildup of what's going on with this video. And
all right, look, first of all, you've got to remember, a lot of people in my audience do not have computers, have not seen the photographs.
Okay.
So as best you are able, please describe the two photographs that we now have and are on the website.
All right, very specifically, the photographs that were released exclusively at first to your website through Rocket Video are of 2 minutes and 55 seconds of a piece of video that appears to show two men, one in a military uniform and another one in civilian clothes, sitting with their backs to the camera, with the camera looking through a pane of glass, very much like you would have in any sort of interrogation room. And at the end of a relatively long table, you see a creature. This creature seems to, the table comes up to about the middle of its chest. The creature seems to be relatively small, probably about, I would say, about 3.5 feet tall. It has a very, very large, bulbous head with sort of pinkish beige skin.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very large, almond-shaped, jet black eyes. No nose. With a very long, extended chin, with a mouth at the in the middle of this chin. Now, it seems to be wearing a grayish tunic of some kind that comes up to the top of the neck. You don't actually see the creature's arms in the video. The creature in the video is bobbling around. It almost looks as though it can't keep its head up, which would make sense because it apparently has a very, very small neck relative to a very, very large head. In the video, and this is the first photograph that was taken, in the video what you see in this photograph is you can actually see the creature sitting at the end of the table in a darkened room. Apparently the room is kept very dark because they're very, very large eyes and they're very sensitive to light. You see a monitor on the lower right-hand side that is a flashing, it looks like a heart monitor of some kind. It's actually, it has a very unusual motion to the monitor. It's actually not a... it's not actually like a lub-dub that you would have with a human heart. This seems to be actually bouncing straight up and down. So I'm assuming that it's some sort of heart monitor or some kind of medical device. Towards the end of the video, and remember there's only about 2 minutes and 55 seconds, you see at the bottom of the video letters that are burned on the lower left-hand side, what we call a video burn. In other words, they're permanent, which says DNI/27. And then the rest of the video seems to be a time code showing day, hour, minutes, tenths of seconds, etc., that run across the bottom of the video. Now, what occurs is that you see the creature sort of bobbling in a very unstable manner at the end of the table, and the creature at the end of the video goes into a seizure, and its mouth begins to open and close as though it's gasping for air. Its arms do not come up. We don't know if the arms maybe are, if it's shackled somehow or maybe chained to the chair, but its arms don't come up. The creature's mouth begins to open and close. It begins to sort of tip forward. A reddish foam begins to come out of the lower left-hand side of the creature's mouth. The man in the military suit makes a gesture, and you see then two doctors who step into the frame. One pulls in what appears to be a crash cart of some kind. They pull their masks up as they come into frame, and so the second photo that was released on your website actually shows these two doctors as the creature's mouth is open, as it's actually gasping for air, having the seizure. The doctor on the left takes what appears to be a piece of gauze and begins to wipe the creature's mouth, whereas the doctor on the right puts his finger into the creature's mouth and clears the air passage, then pulls out what appears to be a pen light and looks first in the creature's eye and then away, and then in the creature's eye and then away, and then looks in what appears to be the creature's nose and mouth, puts the pen light back in his pocket and begins cradling the creature's head, examining the being, looking, what I thought, in a very helpful manner, as if they were very much concerned as to what was happening to it. And that's it. That's the end of the video. Now, many people have seen this. It causes a number of emotional reactions. Major Bob Dean, who was a former commander for SHAPE, saw the video, and it made him cry. He thought that it was a horrible injustice, the conditions that this creature was in. Whitley Strieber had an odd reaction. We actually offered to show Whitley the video originally so that he could be on the home videotape that they're releasing, and he refused. And then when Strange Universe was released, a small five-second clip of the video, Whitley then agreed, since he was going to be on television, I guess, to actually view the creature. And Whitley's reaction was kind of odd. A lot of people seem to think that the creature is being manhandled, that it's somehow being brutalized somehow, and from what I could see in the video, I think nothing could be further from the truth. It's sitting there, and it does have a seizure, and it seems as though they're trying to help it when it begins to gasp. But, I mean, there's nobody blackjacking it or torturing it or anything. It's just...
as you all know, I've interviewed Whitley. I've talked to Whitley. And as a matter of fact, I talked to Whitley prior to tonight. Mm-hmm. And he was so emotionally impacted by this video. If I had said, come on, Whitley, I've got to have you, he would have come on. But he really is emotionally stretched out to the breaking point on this video, and so I decided not to really press him on it. He was very much affected by it, Sean, and he did feel that there was some brutalization going on. I guess Victor is really the only one who can tell us exactly what the attitude was, but there was some feeling that maybe this alien was not so friendly to us, so in our interrogation of it, we were not so friendly to it. You, on the other hand, feel they were doing nothing but trying to help this creature.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no rough treatment that we could see on the video. Victor hasn't intimated in anything he said that the creature was being harmed or it was being brutalized. It certainly looked sick. I mean, they were trying to communicate with it and trying to get as much information out of it as possible. This was probably the last interview. The interview only lasted the 3 minutes, because when they brought the creature in, they were only clarifying some points from a previous interview when they were previously talking to it, and so they were clarifying something, and literally just in the preliminary stages of communicating with it when it went into the seizure.
Well, one would assume, since in the second photograph there is a doctor, this creature was breathing our air. Yes.
With some difficulty, but yes, it was. And there are actually two doctors. It's kind of hard to see the second one because he's sort of leaning out of the shot.
Okay, so would you imagine that was the problem?
Problems breathing the air? I don't know. I don't think it would be, because why would it begin to foam? I mean, there is a sort of a liquid or a foam that starts to come out of its mouth. So it might have been some sort of internal problem. And the back part of the skull is very interesting as well, because the face of the creature seems is sort of an interesting pinkish beige color, but the back part of the head looks like sort of a mottled bluish color, almost as if it had contusions or, I mean, it doesn't look well. Of course, I don't know what a well alien looks like, but you know, this creature doesn't
good point.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily look well, but you know, how can we tell what's well and what isn't for a creature like this? I think the most interesting thing is that many of the people I've interviewed and spoken to out at Area 51 have described these gourd-headed creatures, that they have very long chins, that one of the nicknames for them out at Area 51 was supposed to be the gourd heads, or the gordos, because they had these very, very long chins, that these beings weren't particularly malevolent. They were called the kids, supposedly, or the nickname anyway, the joke was that they were called the kids at the base, or the munchkins, and that on a number of occasions, both a security guard, two other scientists that I've spoken to, describe a being that looks very much like this. Actually described three beings that they saw. One, these very, very tall, blonde men who've been on the facility. Another race that they claimed was sort of had a flat head, very, very strong and muscular, like wrestlers, about 4.5 to 5 feet tall, looking very Chinese, actually. And what appeared to have been something that was very, very humanoid, but also mildly reptilian. And they seem to also say that the creatures, one of the most interesting things in one of the accounts was of a person who saw this, was that the creature moved like a puppet, that when they saw it, it looked as though it was underwater or having some difficulty with our gravity. which of course would make sense, because here we have a creature with a head that is literally probably three times the size of its body mass. And remember, human beings have very, very thick necks and shoulder muscles at the back of the skull with about a 4.5 to 5 pound brain.
So that would indicate development under different gravity conditions.
Exactly. Different gravity conditions and also under different light conditions as
and
well.
And possibly different atmospheric conditions. Now, maybe it breathed close to what we breathe, but not quite what we breathe. That would be very upsetting.
Yes.
I mean, if you induce a little bit of too much carbon monoxide, for example, in our air, look what happens to us.
Yes. Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
So it's taking this all the way back. I mean, there have been obviously rumors for so long from so many people who have had eyewitness experiences with these creatures, you know, specifically at Area 51, claiming that they were there and that they were under the care of the military or they were helping or assisting us, that if this man, Victor, and this video turns out to be genuine and turns out to be real, I mean, it's certainly a milestone of a lot of confirmation of what's going on. I mean, going all the way back, I mean, obviously we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the Roswell crash now. The debate between many of the people who were involved in the recovery of the bodies at Roswell, specifically there's a big difference because the alien autopsy tape that was brought forward is a very, very different creature than the being that the people at Roswell described, which was very, very small, with three fingers and an opposable thumb, with, you know, looking very much more like the beings that we're going to see in this that you see in this video, as opposed to the six-fingered, six-toed beings that are actually relatively large that are shown in the alien autopsy. And I think that the misnomer is that the alien autopsy footage was actually a crash that may have occurred either in Aztec or Corona, possibly even as close as Paradise Valley to the Phoenix area, and that it was a different creature. I mean, it's my theory that we were experimenting with microwave grids at the in Socorro at the RX-27 microwave towers, and that we were experimenting with very, very powerful radar and microwave grid fields for a 300-400 mile radius all across the northern part of New Mexico. And I think that that is when those towers went online in the early part of 1947, began to knock all these craft out of the sky. Now, there's one other theory to this that I find kind of interesting, is that at the same time, you had German technology that, of course, was captured during the war. Victor von Schauberger and the Horten brothers were actually developing a boomerang-shaped, very fat boomerang-shaped disc that, well, sort of a half disc, like a semicircle with sort of a jag in the center, looking very much like the bat plane, except sort of rounded on the nose.
Right.
And that these craft were specifically taken to places like Area 51 and...
All right. I want to ask a question. Would you cite the STS-48 video as proof of the kind of technology you're talking about right now? Because clearly there seems to be in the STS-48 video something that comes up from Earth, seems to intercept an object, and that object then immediately changes course and takes off like a bat out of hell away from Earth.
Absolutely. And actually, in that same video, that's not even the most... I mean, you sort of miss it, sort of like a magician, because you see the most spectacular thing coming up out of the atmosphere and then juking to the right. But there's another saucer in the lower left-hand corner. There's other video from STS-48 that also shows an entire, what appears to be a whole Star Wars operation, complete with buoys and saucers moving in docking maneuvers. It's all over the place.
Well, I've got one little jump on you. Earlier today, Richard Hoagland came to visit me, and with him he brought the STS-80 video, and I've got that now. And it shows some things, and I'm not going to give it away because Richard has more research to do, but it makes the STS-48 video look like kid stuff.
I can imagine.
All right, look, quickly, Area 51. I'm adjacent to it. There's a magazine article that says Area 51 has moved. Where do you think they got this? Could it be real?
Well, originally when I was going out there beginning in 1991 and when I was doing my research between 91 and late 93, and in May of 1991, I found the sort of the beginning of the end for Area 51. I found a hilltop that actually looked down on the facility, which then brought, you know, all the international world media out there to climb up this hill and look down the throat of the base. It was late 93 that we'd been going out there, and it was December of 93 when we finally gave up, because we'd been going out there for about 4 months on Wednesday nights, on alternate nights, literally camping out there and really hadn't seen anything. And we're talking about the things we saw during the day is we saw the stealth fighter and we saw some unusual designs of planes and things going very, very quickly. But in late 1993 was when they moved the flying saucer technology out. I mean, the Papoose Lake hangars have been completely destroyed and dismantled. And the nine craft that Bob Lazar was working on were, I think, specifically moved to Tucson. And I think four of them were moved to Tucson, and three of them were actually moved to a place called Patuxent River, Maryland, which is outside of Washington, D.C. So they haven't had saucer testing going on at Area 51 since late 1993. And all these media, and then it seemed as though the minute the curtain went down and they moved all of the really secret stuff someplace else, the gate went up and the media jumped all over it. That's when you had Larry King and Montel Williams and everybody else jumped on it. So it was like Ollie Ollie Oxenfree, come on down. And the minute there was nothing to see, and people were calling me saying, oh, take us out there. And I was saying, no, because there's nothing to see. Now, where are the saucers at? Very interestingly, is that in 1990, and remember they'd moved, I think, a lot of those saucers there into Area 51 in probably about 87, between 87 and 89. In 1990, there was a man named George Hansen who took a video on top of the Tropicana Hotel in downtown Las Vegas of a fleet of 5 to 8 diamond-shaped craft that were maneuvering in an amazing way.
Oh, I've seen it.
Directly over McCarran Airport.
Yep.
Well, tell me, Art, if you don't think that those ships that George Hansen took, those triangular craft, don't look exactly like the ships that parked themselves over Phoenix and Prescott, Arizona, about a month ago.
They do. There's no question about it. So, again, because we have almost no more time to the top of the hour, is Area 51 still there?
Oh, of course. It's still there. It's got probably anywhere from 3,500 to almost 6,000 people. It's still got a six-mile runway. It's still a major research and development site.
Is the article that appeared, what, in Popular Mechanics?
Popular Mechanics, right.
Is that disinformation?
It is and it isn't, because they're talking about Area 6413, which is up in White Sands. And White Sands has always been a missile testing range. And what they've moved is they've moved the new space shuttle program up to 6413, which is specifically the X-33 and the very cheap, maneuverable million-dollar rockets that can go up.
We've got photographs of those on the website. All right, Sean, hold on. We'll be right back. This is CBC.
Is taking calls on the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
It is going to be a very interesting morning. Coming up sometime this hour, not yet, maybe shortly, the mysterious Victor, the Area 51 employee, Victor, who claims he smuggled a video out of Area 51 of an interrogation, of a questioning of an actual alien, and we back that up with photographs. I have a second photograph now on my website, and you are more than welcome to take a look. They're up there for your perusal. We have otherwise described them as best we can. With me also is Sean David Morton. And I'm keeping my eye on a special line here, waiting for it to ring. Victor will be using a voice changer, as you can imagine. If he is a current or just a relatively current employee of Area 51, he does not want his voice recognized. So we're going to get a chance to ask him some questions about this very mysterious base I live so close to. Coming up, I think, sometime this hour. All right, here we go, folks. We do have Victor, I believe, on the line. If you want to see the photographs from the Alien Interview Interrogation. We'll find out what it is. They are at www.artbell.com. That's www.artbell.com. These photographs come to us courtesy of a video allegedly smuggled from Area 51 by the man I think you're about to hear from, Victor. Now, let us first discern whether we have Sean here. Sean?
I'm here, boss.
Okay. Here we go, I think. Let's see if we've got Victor on the line. Victor, are you there?
I'm here.
Welcome to the program, Victor.
Yes, I think it's fair to say at this moment I'm incensed. This snafu with the telephone numbers, can I ask you who is at your studio at this time?
Well, I'm here. And others...
So?
No, my wife is... my wife is here, of course. I do my broadcast from home, Victor, and other than myself and my wife, there's nobody.
Ah. Well, I would just, at this moment, I believe that 45 minutes from now, I will have finished my last public pronouncement, because this business with Jeff and the phone numbers is not part of the agreement.
Well, Victor, it was just a problem because somebody wrote a 7 instead of a 1. That's you know, it was just a simple mistake.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're sorry.
Yeah, we are sorry, and it was just a simple mistake is exactly correct. Victor...
Who was that second voice?
I'm sorry, this is Sean Morton. How are you, sir?
Oh, Mr. Morton.
Nice to talk to you.
Yes.
If you can, Victor, we would like to both probably ask you some questions if we can. Obviously, if you can't answer a question, you let us know, and, you know, we'll back away.
By the way, Mr. Morton?
Yes, sir.
John Morton?
Yes.
I have come into possession of your Delphi Associate newsletter dated
yes.
April 11th,
yes.
1997, and I have to say this is how misinformation proliferates. I don't know where you got your information about what I have stated to the rocket people, but there are a number of statements here that are incorrect.
Okay, well, maybe we should start there, because I tried to check everything with Jeff. All I had was...
Mr. Broadstreet, he has successfully prevented me from prescribing myself a double Bushmallow for nerves. I, frankly, well, let's leave that for the moment.
All right.
In your newsletter, you state, Victor was assisting in the downloading of video analog footage to digital computer storage. I have never stated that I was assisting or participating in this downloading. I mentioned the downloading. I referred to the downloading in my cryptic attempt to suggest how the tape was smuggled out, as everyone referred to. Seems to prefer to refer to it.
Is that a reasonable a reference to it, smuggled?
Well, not in the sense of... Well, later in the same newsletter, Mr. Morton says that I... Let me see if I can find it here. Where is it?
Victor?
Oh, yes. And an opportunity came where he was left unwatched and unsupervised for a scant few moments, which allowed him to make a quick VHS copy of footage he was viewing and somehow managed to smuggle it off the base in a bag with some other equipment. Now, I've never made a statement like this. It's a charming scene for a science fiction movie, but frankly, a VHS tape has never come onto or been taken off of the S4...
All right, Victor. Victor, this is Art Bell. Listen, let's not concentrate on what he's got wrong. Let's concentrate on what really did happen.
All right.
Okay? So, first of all, how did you get this tape? Can you say that?
I cannot say specifically how I came into possession of this tape. I stated in the interview with the rocket people, which, by the way, was in September of last year. I was under the impression that I would be through with my contractual obligations to them by Christmas. But that's neither here nor there. I came into possession of this tape thanks to a confluence of circumstances which I can relate now. I was not able to relate it in September, but circumstances have changed, which we may get to. The linchpin of the possibility that was afforded to me to bring out this particular piece of information is that Area 51 is now defunct as an operating location for the government's alien program.
All right.
And this process has been ongoing since 1991.
All right, can we ask you straight out, did you bring that tape out of Area 51 personally, or did you acquire it after it had been removed by somebody else?
I was the active agent in removing the data that appears on that tape from S4.
From S4.
The tape itself is a simple VHS copy which I provided to Rocket Pictures. The actual data was digital.
Uh-huh.
It was a relatively small bundle of information. It did not require anything so conspicuous as a VHS tape to be brought out. And I will not say at this time whether it was brought out in a discrete unit or whether it was smuggled out in some other...
All right, but in a digital form like an AVI file or something like that that you then converted to analog to VHS?
Something like that, yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Do you know what DNI stands for?
Department of Naval Intelligence.
Okay, that settles that one. Were you an employee or are you now an employee of Area 51?
In September, they asked me the same question after we had a pre-interview in which I stated that I would not answer it.
Okay.
I suppose it's a question that has to be asked. I'm not going to answer whether I was an employee at S4, but I have been physically on the site, and you can look into the various options available to an individual to bring them to that.
All right, Victor. Well, not too many people get invited as just visiting to Area S4. So is it reasonable to ask you how you were transported to the base? I live in Pahrump, Nevada, where every morning there are buses, Victor, that take employees to Area 51. Hell, it says Area 51 right on the side. Other people are flown out to Area 51.
Yes, I don't want to specify too specifically because it will tend to indicate when I was there, but they do run the EG&G 737 out of McCarran and more recently CT-43 transports. I suppose I can say I did not take the bus.
Okay. Okay, good. Then you flew. So next question is, how long had that alien, do you know, been on the base before they filmed that segment of which you have a portion?
Approximately 20 months. It was brought in late 1989, and the tape was from January of 1991.
Okay. Do you know how we got our hands on this alien? Was it as a result of a crash or a landing, or do you have any history at all?
Well, this brings up a question that's central to the whole issue of the government's retention of these beings. I believe the government's position is that they shot this alien down. I do not personally believe that the government could shoot this alien down if the alien did not choose to be shot down. But perhaps now is not the right time to be getting into the larger issues of their presence.
You are aware that we have, then, the technology to shoot down alien craft?
I am aware that our technology has been used to down alien craft. Whether our technology is advanced enough to give us the power to choose to bring one of these craft down is another matter entirely.
All right, Victor, there were a lot of people who viewed the video. Some, you know, on Strange Universe, they saw just a very few seconds of it. And, the entire thing, I believe. And Whitley Strieber was one of them who reacted very emotionally, Victor, and thought that alien was being treated badly. Can you characterize the treatment of the alien in the course of the whole thing?
The alien was being treated badly, but not, that was not the intention. The maltreatment of the aliens stems from our essential helplessness to either help or affect them. The dog and pony show of a medical team handling the physical debilities of these beings is one of the constant sources of paranoia and chaos within the administration of these programs. You find a high degree of well-educated charlatanism within these programs simply because the government requires that various disciplines deal with these aliens, and these disciplines do not have the science to back up their efforts. This brings up, I've been given a tape of Mr. Strieber's appearance on your program.
Online, yes.
April 12th.
Yes.
And I just want to respond to, or possibly two of his statements over the course of this call, but one in particular now. He took me to task for a statement I made in the interview to Rocket Pictures, in which I said that this was second-hand information, but I said that the position of the scientists who had studied this was that the aliens had eliminated viral and microbial life from their own ecosystem. And Mr. Strieber made the sensible point from a terrestrial point of view that microbes play a beneficial as well as a harmful role in the health and correct functioning of human beings, and that therefore it was scientifically foolish to make this comment. Well, first of all, I have not specified that I'm a scientist, so I'm not going to jump up on my high horse and become offended at this, but I would like to point out that the overriding quality of these beings is a level of advancement beyond our ability to understand what it is they're doing, both as beings and as workers of technological apparent miracles.
Were we able to communicate with it?
This is another issue that is fraught with ambiguity, but let me finish the comment about about microbes. All the evidence suggests that these beings are biologically inert in relation to our ecosystem. They might as well be a petri dish. And the statement that I made, which again was second-hand information, background information, but the comment that I made seeking to explain the last partition between the interviewer and the being,
yes,
and is seeking to explain the sort of lackadaisical hygienic standards of the medical team, was that there's a half-hearted, by now, attempt to minimize microbial contamination of the beings because the microbes and various other biological entities can form colonies within these being systems. They operate, their physiology operates way that is symbolically similar, let us say, to human physiology, but does not appear to include the normal biological
Okay, Victor, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We've got a break here. We'll be right back. This is CBC.
Toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is. My guests are the mysterious Victor, the man who has supplied Rocket Video with the alien interrogation video, if that's the right name for it, and I'm not sure it is, and Sean David Morton. Back to them in a moment. Now back to Victor, who is using a voice changer to protect his identity, and Sean David Morton. Victor.
Yes.
Let me try asking again. You've kind of characterized this alien as kind of like a petri dish, or a here at any rate in a petri dish. Might I ask, did we manage any form of communication with it?
This is the great mystery involved in the government's hosting of these beings since the late 40s, in fact. The telepathic capabilities of these beings have been long established, at least so far as DNI is concerned. That was another statement that Mr. Strieber made on your program, that the statement that the man in the foreground in the video is a telepath seemed like science fiction. But I actually agree with him more than perhaps he would expect. The issue here is that no one who has ever been in the presence of these beings has not felt as if thoughts, not his own, were entering his brain. And this has been long established, and various experiments have been done in which the government satisfied itself that these beings were giving off some form of telepathic contact or thought transference. The question mark is whether certain individuals truly are more capable of receiving and returning these messages than the average person.
Sure.
And this is one of the elements of the entire black program related to alien visitors that I find amusing. I believe that many, if not all, of the telepaths who have been recruited or who have cleverly managed to get themselves recruited into this program are largely the same sort of charlatans you can call late at night, at 99 cents a minute or whatever it is.
So in other words, you're not trusting of whatever information they think they might have gleaned.
I believe it is at best heavily influenced by the assumptions and beliefs and hopes of these individuals, and at worst is a deliberate attempts to tell the government what the government wants to know.
Yep.
And this may account for part of the fact that the may account in part, I should say, for the fact that the government has had these beings for 50 years now, and has amassed a constant and ever-growing stream of data supposedly emanating from them, and yet is incapable of consistently using this technology or entering into effective relations with these beings.
So you're saying we really have not effectively communicated with them? There has been no vocal communication?
The aliens do not speak.
What about hand signs or other methods of communication that would tell us these are sentient beings and not robotic in nature?
That's a very astute question. The telepathy and the technology which they so clearly possess are the only signs of their sentience. As for their gestures, they have on occasion used gestures such as stop or come here.
Uh-huh.
That mimic signs that I suppose they have seen among the human personnel that they've encountered, and the civilians, by the way. This business of pictographs, which Mr. Broadstreet gave quite a bit of emphasis to in this video, this never-ending video, which I thought I was through with 7 months ago.
It is important, Victor, because the video, of course, is incredible,
yeah.
but your words about it go a long way toward backing it up or causing people to become very skeptical. May I ask you, Victor, why the room was kept so dark? Is it because of the large eyes and the sensitivity to light?
This is the official explanation for the darkness of the room. But you'll note that the alien himself is bathed in light. It's the room that's dark. And I frankly don't have an adequate explanation for this.
All right, the alien in the second photograph with the doctor present, whose face, I understand, has been erased.
I'm sorry?
With the doctor present in the second...
Who told you his face has been erased?
It looks as though it has been...
I'm sorry, which figure are you referring to?
I'm referring to an apparent physician who has his finger, a gloved finger, in the mouth.
Yes, well, if his features are not visible, that's the effect of the mask. I did nothing, and I don't believe Rocket has done anything to distort the actual images.
That's interesting.
In fact, the images are a bit degraded from the VHS copy.
I'm sure they are, sure.
The telepath in the left foreground is so dark that a number of people have missed him. In fact, Rocket just sent the video to be analyzed by some computer whiz in Phoenix, Arizona.
Uh-huh. We sent it to Dr. Jim Delatoso in Phoenix.
Yes. Well, there he is. Phoenix? Yes. He analyzed the footage, made a number of odd statements. But one thing, he commented on the three human individuals in the video. There were four. Apparently he did not even see the person on the left, which I find bizarre.
Okay, we'll take a look. Now the doctor or the physician, whatever we've got here, with his finger in the alien's mouth,
yes,
in the second photograph.
Yes.
The alien was apparently having some sort of seizure and was frothing. Was this a dying alien? Did this alien die?
I think you will find... I think you will find that all of the reports of these beings inevitably end with them dying, and most of their appearances only knew that he disappeared from S4, but that was also at the point when S4 was being stood down.
Do you now know him to be dead?
I now believe very strongly that the alien is dead. I would go so far as to say that all of the beings in the government's possession are now dead.
Are we mistreating them?
Did the Romans mistreat Jesus? This is the central issue for me, increasingly, and even more so in the time since I brought out this tape. I believe that these beings are engineering their own treatment. They are presenting themselves as a task to us, and I do not believe that if they were not willing to be treated in the way that we treat them, we would have the power to do so. But in the sense that these beings are dying in our custody, and in the sense that our treatment of them seems to have no taint of commonality, no successful two-way communication that we can understand. I believe that the aliens understand us better than we understand them, and I believe that the statements they make or appear to make are calibrated to some purpose of their own, which is not clearly understood by us.
That brings me to the next question. That is, with whatever has been divined, is there anything you're fairly sure you can tell us about what they're all about, where they're from, and what their agenda is? In other words, what they want, why they're here, that sort of thing. Is there anything that seems clear in any one of those areas to you?
Clear, no. But I believe in an overarching sense, these beings have been here before, and the program that they are performing upon the human race is as old as the human race, certainly as old as consciousness. And I believe,
let me try this. What you're saying might lead some to believe that they are, in fact, the architect of the human race. Is that without...
That is... The architect is not a term I would use, but in the sense that you mean it, I believe I would agree, yes.
All right. You have told us that the Department of Naval Intelligence is the DNI. Can you enlighten us at all as to the rest of the coding at the bottom?
Yes. Let me see. Do I have the...
I'd be glad to read you what we have on one. The latest photograph we have says DNI/2704/02-5818.
Yes, this is not. It's not really the issue. Can you hold on 1 second?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yes. At any rate, DNI is Department of Naval Intelligence. 27. Is refers to a system of division that DNI adopted back when they first began using time code, and it's a very rigged adaptation of an earlier logging system for visual documentation. And then the final 8 digits are self-explanatory. They're hours, minutes, seconds, and frames.
Okay.
And 27 has no meaning in and of itself. It's merely a logging system that can be accessed according to code books and what have you.
All right. Some people have said, why is the video so foggy? Now, I view it as fairly clear, but one would imagine that with the high-tech video equipment we have, you would get very, very, very sharp images. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, part of the fogginess is the VHS copy, and I'm debating the possibly when I delivered this tape originally, I was extremely paranoid, and I have not become any less paranoid. But I believe I understand where I stand a little bit better now.
Are you are you in fear of your life?
Well, the simple answer is yes, but I'm by nature an observer. I have not personally experienced harassment, and I think I've been relatively successful in maintaining my anonymity and so to speak. But
you are convinced they do not.
In the experiences of others, both individuals who are known to the public because they made it into the media, and other individuals, that there are great dangers involved in bringing this kind of information out, not because the government is all powerful, but because the government is and knows itself to be out of control in relation to this phenomenon. They crave control, and they have no control, and as it leaks away from them, they can become vicious.
Sean, do you have any questions?
Well, specifically, there was no sound on the tape that we were given. Can you...
Yes. Oh, can I break in here? Jeff has just supplied me with a note, which I suppose qualifies as a commercial. He says, the video in the rocket tape is fairly clear, not foggy. This is true. It does look better in the video.
Okay.
All
right.
But
yes,
it is... Oh, we never did finish that point. It is dark, and I do not have an answer that satisfies me for why it is so. This business of the aliens needing the environment to be dark does not wash with me, mainly because the being itself is bathed in light. On the other hand, well, if I go any further in this direction, I think I may be stepping into the areas that I am trying to avoid for my own self-protection.
Victor said, you said in your interview that you had actually personally seen this creature on an occasion. Can you tell us anything?
This is the case, but I made it abundantly clear that it was not necessarily the session that is represented in this video.
Yes, but can you tell us about what happened when you actually saw the creature and what your opinion was and what your thoughts were?
Well, no, I can't. I can tell a secondhand anecdote. If I speak about the occasion when I personally encountered the being, I would be compromising myself.
All right. What about your emotions? In other words, what did you feel when you were in its presence? Can you describe that at all? Did you feel awed? Did you feel sorrow? Did you feel elated? What did you feel?
I suppose I felt sorrow. I felt anger. I'm not by nature an emotional... Well, I am an emotional person. I'm not by nature an interactive person, a person who makes emotional connections easily, and certainly in the presence of a being from another world, one would think this would be even more difficult. However, I, like everyone, as I say, who has ever come into immediate contact with these beings, I felt an intense presence within me that was utterly foreign to my experience before that time, and I must say this has changed me. It has had an effect that I did not choose, and I still possibly willfully refuse to welcome. I'm in the beginning when I brought this tape out, I suppose in a sense it was an emotional reaction to that meeting, but it's gotten away from me. This effort on my part to do my bit, so to speak.
That's a very important question, Victor. You got this out of Area 51 in the way described earlier.
Why not described earlier, as a matter of fact? But
well, by digital form, in other words.
Yeah, well, it was made possible by the digital.
I've got you. But my question is, what was your motivation in bringing it out? Did you just want the American people to know? Is that the idea?
Well, as a matter of fact, on your own show, the with Whitley Strieber, there was something he said that struck me so singularly that I wrote it down. As a matter of fact, I have it here on a scrap of paper. He said, "This is the face that mankind is turning to this other world," and I suppose to some extent that was my motive for attempting to place this before the public. I believe that these beings cannot be harmed by us in any significant way, in any way that is meaningful to them. But at the same time, I believe they're presenting us with a sort of test. They have appeared in an incomprehensible panoply of circumstances in front of private individuals who are then left, metaphorically speaking, wandering in the wilderness, unable to convince the world at large that what they've experienced is real. And at the same time, they have involved themselves in this incomprehensible.
Victor, I've got to stop you. We're at the top of the hour, and I'm asking you to stay over a little bit because we haven't had a full hour with you.
Oh, it is one now.
It already is. How time flies, huh?
Well, you caught me in the middle of my larger statement, I suppose, so I will hold on.
Very good. Stand by, Victor. Stand by, Sean David Morton. I'm Art Bell. This is CBC.
Taking calls on the Wildcard Line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Good morning. My guests are Sean David Morton and the mysterious, and for a good reason, Victor, who brought out, got out, took out, managed to somehow get out a digital version of the alien interview that can be seen in single picture form, at least a couple of photographs, on my website now at www.artbell.com. We'll get back to Victor in a moment. Now, back to Sean David Morton and Victor. Gentlemen, welcome back.
How far down did you look?
Thank you.
We are back on the air, and if everybody would turn off their radios, please. Okay.
Victor and I were just talking about, he was asking me whether or not it was me that found the hill that looked down on the base, and I told him that it was. And
yes, indeed.
I don't know if he's there. Are you there, Victor?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Victor, might I ask then, can you give us any physical details of the base itself? In other words, what the hangars are like, what the buildings are like, anything at all about
Area 51? Are you referring to the Groom Dry Lake
Sure.
facility or to F4?
Either one that you're able to describe, actually.
Well, the Groom Dry Lake facility has been broadcast several times now on various programs, and it is a relatively open facility in comparison to S4, which, as you may or I'm sure you do know, is 10 miles to the south in abutting Papoose Lake.
Well, we have seen satellite photographs of Area 51.
Yes, this is the demise of Area 51. You're seeing the Open Skies Treaty, the UFO tourism, which Mr. Morton is a big contributor to, and also a certain psychological effect, at least that's how I see it, of the Gulf War. When the soldiers came back from the Gulf War, complaining of Gulf War syndrome, and this saturated the media, I believe this was a direct cause of the lawsuit of the various Area 51 employees who claimed that they had been harmed by the years of fallout from
That's right.
the nuclear testing. At any rate, all of these causes contributed to what is now the case at Area 51, which is that the saucer program and the attempts at communication with the beings and the facilities for the beings are now abandoned.
All right. We've seen the photographs of what is above ground at Area 51. I would be interested in any description of S4 or to know how much of Area 51 and or S4 is underground.
Yes. Nothing significant is underground at the Groom Dry Lake facility. However, S4 has four underground levels for a total of five if you count the surface.
And these are devoted to, are you able to describe what these levels are devoted to any degree?
The first two levels at S4 are the domain of the back engineering program for the saucers, which I'm sure that you've heard your fill of from Robert Lazar and others.
You bet.
Level 3 and 4, below the below level 1 and 2, is the domain of the program dealing with the EVEs.
It includes the
living quarters for the EVEs. By the way. Breathe oxygen. During the chaos of the phone number, I heard a bit of your earlier program. I'm not sure if I heard you correctly debating what the aliens breathe. They breathe oxygen. They can walk down any street in America and survive as well as they survive.
Well, if that is the case, can you describe then the reason for the apparent seizure that alien was having, or the reason that they die?
I'm sorry.
In other words,
you just handed me another note, and I would you repeat the question?
Okay, yes, sure. The question is, if oxygen is common, if they
yes.
breathe as we do, then can you tell
well,
us...
Well, that I didn't say. I'm again, this is one of the mysteries of the beings and their technology. Did I finish my comment earlier about Schreiber's comment about the telepathy? The microbes. They, to a certain extent, the beings appear to be only symbolically biological. Now, what I mean by that is they. When they're autopsied, they have the organs of a biological entity. They appear to function as a biological entity, but there is a lack of the chemical and physical functions one would expect in a biological entity. And this has led many individuals to consider them to be somehow. Not quite physical, that they are somehow hallucinatory, no matter how physical they may appear to be. But another way of looking at it, and this relates to their technology as well, is to just simply say that we are not capable of understanding how they have evolved or how they have changed themselves in their own environment. Because because, I mean, think about it. If you took a simple teenager's CD of today, you know, some rock with the Pink Floyd or the Matching Pumpkins, and you took that CD and somehow transferred it back 100 years, there would be no science on the face of the earth that would be able to tell you what that CD was for or how it operated.
Yes, it would be as
no evidence.
It would be as magic. That's a good point. Now, Victor, this alien was in distress. Obviously, it was sick. Is there something on Earth that causes them to have a shortened lifespan that you're aware of?
This is the source of constant theories and no effective treatment. I do not believe that the aliens are dying because they cannot live in our environment. I don't want to make too many religious allusions, but to a certain extent, for some reason, my mind keeps coming back to the story of Jesus, which before this occurred, I did not believe to be a historical fact. But at any rate, certainly symbolically, it's applicable that the Son of God would make himself vulnerable to human action when obviously the Son of God would not be in that position.
Victor, did you see any other
natural condition?
Sorry, did you see any other creatures being interviewed other than this one? I mean, on the video that you
I did not personally see any other creatures, and I did not see any videotape of other species. I saw a videotape of a being of the same species, another being. I don't want to get into things that will tend to narrow down my participation and make it more clear.
All right,
I fit into this, but I am not 100% a believer in the Pleiadian aliens and the various other the more humanoid species. I believe they're wish fulfillment.
Do we know where these particular aliens, this particular alien, is from?
I believe they are from not here. I do not believe that they are necessarily from the far reaches of space, from Zeta Reticuli, what have you. Various science fiction writers and scientists have postulated different forms of alternate universes, and I don't believe there's really any scientific understanding of this phenomenon. But if I were to choose an answer to that question, I would say they come from another dimension. They come from a contiguous place that is not available to us, whereas their place and ours are equally available to them.
Very informative. All right. What is the tone at Area 51? In other words, are they planning at some point, do you believe, to go public, release anything soon? Will there be a moment of revelation, or are they going to continue to keep this black?
I believe that the very real radioactive contamination from fallout is developing into a cover story, which may or may not allow the government to begin allowing outsiders into Area 51 to show everyone that it was simply a base, an artifact of Cold War spy operations, where while all the functional operations are moved northeast into Utah.
Okay.
This is my belief. In other words, there is a very good chance that Sean Morton will very soon be able to get off his hill, go down into Area 51 and be told nothing ever happened here.
I'm sure he'll
believe
that.
That. Case, but I
You're already trying to say that, Victor.
Can you confirm the Bob Lazar story as basically accurate?
What is the Bob?
The Bob.
I've heard a number of.
All right, Victor, I have interviewed Bob Lazar. He basically contends that over a period of time, he worked on several craft at Area S4.
Yes.
And would you confirm that much?
I will not confirm that Robert Lazar worked on these craft, but I believe that his information is largely correct. Possibly scuttling back behind my anonymity, I don't want to specify too much of my own contact with
hardware. Can you confirm that those craft were at one time there?
Absolutely. There is no. I can confirm that.
Could you tell us where they might have moved those craft? I mean, not the other stuff like the X-33 and all the stuff they're moving to Utah, but the actual flying saucers.
The saucers themselves, I don't believe, have been moved at this time.
Uh-huh.
I believe they will be moved, and I cannot tell you how they will be moved. I have not made a study of all of the UFO lore, but I believe, I was told that John Lear made a claim that the various government bases are connected by a vast series of underground tunnels.
That's right.
Which would allow for these saucers to be moved underground. Now, I have no knowledge of that. I have never seen evidence of these tunnels. I find it not hard to believe because I have seen what the beings have allowed humans to do with their technology, and I suppose that if it were in part of their plan, they might make this possible, but I believe it's beyond the scope of human engineering to, for instance, connect Edwards Air Force Base to Tonopah or to Area 51. But I certainly believe, even if this is true and I am not aware of it, that there are no tunnels between Area 51, between S4 and the Utah sites, which is where the cover program is moving. Michael Air Force Base and the Utah White Sands.
So then, the popular mechanic story is disinformation. Popular Mechanics is running a story saying that Area 51 is moving, and what you just said seems to indicate that you believe that to simply be a cover.
The Groom Dry Lake operation is more or less what the government has. Well, for a long time they did not say it was anything, but what the government would like you to believe it is a testing ground for super secret aircraft. The S4 site, Papoose Lake, is the site of the truly black program. Now the Groom Dry Lake activities are unquestionably moving to Michael's Air Force base and White Sands. The saucers, as I say, I don't believe they have moved yet. And if the situation at Area 51 is to be continued in its current form, then they will somehow be lifted or dug to these new locations.
There are, Victor, a lot of people who have seen these craft flying in and around S4 and Groom Lake.
Yeah.
And you think the craft are still below ground at S4.
I believe they are, but I don't believe that anyone has actually seen one since the latest early 1992.
So in other words,
late 1991.
You believe they have stopped flying then?
I believe so. I believe any sighting, because this is the thing about the aerial sightings, that, you know, half of them, more than half of them, are wishful thinking. And I believe that the frenzy Area 51, you know, causes people to see things that,
all right.
that are not there.
As I told you earlier, Art, we didn't see anything out there from the summer of,
sure.
of 1993 on.
All right. This may seem a silly question for you, Victor, but I want to ask it. For however long you were in these areas,
yes.
were you fed? Did they give you meals?
I have an interesting story about meals. But as a matter of fact, I can't tell you. that would be another case of me identifying myself. All I will say about meals is that at S4, level 3 and 4, I have no cafeteria facilities, and the personnel who work on those levels do not come up to feed. This sounds ridiculous, but there is a dumbwaiter system which has a somewhat amusing visual. Acts as a somewhat amusing visual metaphor for the transportation of the saucers to the surface, and the plates are coming down these dumb waiters into the security office as the saucers are being elevated to the surface, and I've often found this to be obscurely amusing.
Would you describe this alien as a prisoner or a guest?
Well, I think you can derive my feeling about it from my earlier statements, but I'll say it again. I believe that the government, by turns, likes to pride itself on these creatures being their prisoners, or congratulate themselves on being these creatures' hosts. But in fact, I believe that the creatures are performing their own
function.
Yeah.
All right, Victor. We are at the bottom of the hour, and if you wish to stay, we'd love to have you.
Are we going away for several minutes?
Several minutes, yes.
Well, possibly I'll stay a little longer, but I must go.
Good, you're doing very well. I understand. We'll try and.
Well, my feeling is that this is perhaps my last public statement. So
I understand, so we should make it a good one. Stay right there. My guests, Victor and Sean David Morton. I'm Art Bell.
Toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255, 1-800-618-8255, east of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033, 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
My guests are Victor, who brought, or caused to be brought, a digital form of video, or video in a digital form, out of Area 51, later translated to analog and on VHS. That interrogation or interview of an alien. Sean David Morton is also here. Back to them both in a moment. You're listening to Victor make his last public statement. And so, Victor, I would like to ask another question.
Yeah.
Without telling me, because I realize it would compromise you, how you got this information digitally out, can you describe in a generic way the security at Area 51 and S4?
In a generic way.
In a generic way. In other words, I don't want to know how you got this out, because I'm sure you won't tell me, but I would like to know what kind of security they have at these bases.
Do you mean personnel security?
Sure. What?
Yes, well, the Groom Dry Lake facility is actually relatively low tech. They have badges and they have fingerprint readers. S4 goes a step further with a retinal scan. But as far as the transfer of materials out of either facility, this is strictly controlled. In fact, it's an interesting example of how the government fails in its efforts, even on this level, because the offices and the facilities at S4 have numerous personal mementos which were not supposed to be brought in, and somehow were, which is a never-ending source of amazement to me.
Well, if somebody can get somebody in, then one would presume you could get them out as well. Is a body search a normal course of events?
Yes, certainly at S4. I'm not going to make that statement, but certainly at S4, yes.
Mm-hmm. Sean, anything you want to chime in on here?
Yes. Can you describe anything about the hangars at S4? Anything unusual about the offices and how the hangars were actually connected?
In what sense?
As far as were there offices at the far end of the actual hangars at S4?
By the far end? You mean in relation to the personnel elevators or?
The personnel elevators. Did you actually stay at S4? I mean, did they fly you up there?
No. At Groom Lake, there are military personnel who sleep at the base, but at S4, the staff is bussed in and out on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And you were bussed in and out, and then flown in and out.
Yes.
Bob,
in a sense, let us say, metaphorically speaking, that covers it. I didn't want to make comments about.
All right, Bob Lazar, was or claimed to be working in essence as a subcontractor, a civilian, employed to back engineer these craft that you talked about at S4.
Right.
Can you tell us if you were in that category or
No. At this point, I will understand that you ask these questions, but obviously that falls within the category of questions I won't answer.
All right. Can you tell us if your relationship with the people there is still in place?
No, I will not specify, and I will not specify whether or not I intend to be going on to Utah. My profile at Area 51, I think I have succeeded in keeping rather vague. My public profile in the statements I've made so far, I've reviewed the tape I made for Rocket several times, trying to imagine how someone might infer from my statements things that I meant to keep secret. And frankly, in that case, I forced them to pre-interview me, and then I nixed a number of questions, and they still asked them. It was a semi-fiasco.
I think we were just curious as to whether or not you might be able to get into the base again and maybe bring more video out or more information at any point in the future.
The moment when video could be brought out, I believe, has passed. That's not to say that another similar moment of confusion and indecision on the part of the authorities won't arise again. But this particular 2-minute 55-second clip was strictly a case. of an opportunity presenting itself at a particular moment when the facility was in turmoil, when a number of forces came together. Number one, they've eliminated all of their video. Someone came up with the bright idea that all of this secret documentation would be more secret in a digital format, and of course, anybody involved in the internet knows this is not the case. A good chunk of their budget that they didn't expect to be spending is now spent trying to second guess the ways in which this information can be spread. But at the moment that this clip presented itself to be smuggled out, as we are saying, the confusion, the bureaucratic confusion, and the actual physical confusion at S4 made it possible, and that's no longer the case.
An opportunity. All right, Victor, is there any more video that you have other than that?
No, there is none.
That is a totality.
I've seen other video, but this was the piece that I could take in a metaphorical sense. Again, the Morton's misstatement in his newsletter is correct. Metaphorically, I did see the opportunity and I did take it, and this was the extent, this was the size of the bundle that I could metaphorically again smuggle out. The riches that were that are available are truly mind-boggling. And by the way, I was speaking to Morton during the commercial for a moment, and he brought up the alien autopsy, which I believe, in fact, I would say that I know has to be a hoax, because if only because the beings in that video do not resemble any of the beings in any of the other documentation, and I have not seen the actual autopsies from Roswell. So,
all right,
in some sort of strange way, it could be true, but I do not believe it.
Victor,
certainly the style does not resemble any of the material from the 40s.
All right, Victor, then what do you say to the people who say this is a hoax?
I say that's your right to believe that, and I only hope that you study the video before you jump to that conclusion. Also, I hope that this is the beginning of a trend. I believe that I don't believe that the government can stand down at Area 51 and not have the kind of leak that it cannot spin to its advantage in the way that so many previous leaks have been spun.
Victor, if they were to identify you now, knowing that you have smuggled this video out,
yes.
If they found you and identified you, what do you believe would happen to you?
I am uncertain. Clearly, Robert Lazar is still alive, but I believe that he has suffered more than even he really understands for what he did. And there have been others who still remain nameless. I suppose at best I would be another doubtful character with a face instead of an anonymous question mark. At worst, I would be dead.
Will there be a day in your life, Victor, when you will say, all right, that's it, I will come forward, I want to tell this story, my real name is, and here's what really happened?
I can't say whether that day will come. I've changed in ways I didn't expect since this entire process began. When I brought this tape to Rocket, I had an idea about myself and about what I was planning to do after revealing this tape that has not come to pass. I'm dealing with the endless confusion that seems same time, my desires for my own life have changed in ways I didn't expect. We spoke of that, the effect of
sure.
these beings, and my feeling is that I may simply fade out, not only from this unwanted public persona, but also from my life as I knew it. I believe to a certain extent these beings are asking us to step away from the life we know, and for human civilization to step away from its path and step out into unknown areas, truly unknown. They don't present us with maps.
All right, Victor. Sean, anything else you can think of?
I just wanted to compliment Victor on just being very eloquent and doing this very, very well. And I mean, I had some, gosh, after that, I had mundane questions like, you know, whether or not the, we didn't see the creature's, the being's hands in the video, and whether or not it was either, it was tied down or it couldn't.
No, it was not tied down.
Okay.
No, the being was weak. The being was seated and was weak, but it was not tied down.
Did it have two fingers, three fingers? Can you describe the digits on the hand?
It has four fingers, one of which resembles a thumb,
uh-huh.
but has a pivot point that human thumb doesn't have. It can function almost as a finger or as a thumb. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. I guess the ultimate question I have is, gosh, Victor, where are we going with all this? I mean, we've got the whole reason I got involved in Area 51 in the first place was because not only because they were flying saucers up and down the valley that I was watching and bringing people out to see, but that this technology was so amazing.
Have you seen any evidence of it in the culture at large?
Of the technology?
Obviously not. And I think you should ask yourself why the government, if it had mastered this alien technology, if it had traded for it or wrested it by violence from these beings, why this technology has not been presented before the world as an example of unimaginable force.
Well, we were discussing that to some degree, and the STS-48 tape and now the STS-80 tape show things that would indicate that we do indeed have this technology, and we are indeed using it, not publicly, but we are using it. Victor, when you gave this tape...
I believe that that's a false dawn. I don't believe it will be followed up. And the reason I don't believe this is that the I believe I was I mentioned earlier the constant the constant contacts these aliens make with private individuals. But the comment I didn't get to was that this constant contact with the government resembles a test. It resembles a test that the government is failing. A test of its purpose and of its spiritual worth, if you will.
All right. When you gave the tape, Victor,
yes.
to Rocket Video,
yes.
what was your motivation? Why did you take this tape to him? Did you want?
I took it to Rocket Video because I had decided that I wanted money, and at the time I had more rationalizations than I have today. But I felt that I was putting myself in danger, putting my career in danger, and that I needed to give myself as much latitude for essentially fleeing as I could, and that I needed money. And when I went to Hollywood hat in hand, rather foolishly, it quickly became apparent to me that almost everyone that almost no one could be trusted to maintain my privacy, not because they particularly, you know, cared about upending my plans, but
sure.
simply because they felt that the publicity would be in, to their benefit, or in some cases, in some of the larger organizations, I didn't get to the point of actually discussing this, but I intuited that they were worried about their reputations. This business with the alien autopsy, I guess, I assume this from things that have been said, that to a certain extent Fox Television has suffered some ridicule that they,
that's right.
they don't seem to be able to
but you're honest,
to
you're
shake off. But at any rate, Rocket Pictures offered me
money.
A deal that I felt I could take, that that still has maintained my anonymity, although they do keep pushing me to make more and more of these statements. This call is the
end of it.
Is the end of the contractual arrangement, and it was supposed to have happened before the end of last year. Not with you, but with whoever they chose as the outside interview, and here we are now, and now they have Germans, they have I don't know who the British, they have innumerable people that they want me to talk to, and I even for money at this point I think it's more dangerous than it's worth.
So you are going to take what money you have been given, and
it's gone. I mean, it's not gone, but I have removed myself financially from a need of them. What I need from Rocket now is simply that they that I fulfill my agreement with them, so that they will fulfill their agreement with me.
And you now wish to fade into obscurity?
Absolutely.
And we will never hear from you again.
I can't. As I say, this entire experience has been not what I expected, I initially had a certain kind of contempt for Robert Lazar. I thought he was a grandstander. I thought he enjoyed the spotlight, and perhaps I can't really say now. I understand the forces that begin to work on you when you do something like this. Not that, you know, no matter how much you try to keep yourself sealed off, when you speak, the response that comes back to you has a pull that is terrible.
Well, there is one big difference, Victor. They know where to find Bob.
Oh,
they
yes.
don't. They don't
yes,
know
they
where
do.
To find you.
Yes. Well, I am hoping to keep it that way.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us.
Oh, I see that it's almost two. I was. Yes, actually, we do need to wrap this up.
I think the appropriate term is terminate the interview.
Yes. Well. I gather that was a joke.
That was a joke. Victor,
yeah.
I wish you a safe, healthy life. You've answered everything to the best of your ability, and we've asked just about everything we can, so be safe, my friend. Be safe. When we come back, Sean David Morton. And we got, oh boy, did we get a lot more from that than I thought we were going to. You have good days and you have bad days, and this is a good day. We will continue in a moment. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is CBC.
Taking calls on the Wildcard Line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here. Wow. That's my first comment to the last 2 hours. Much more than I expected. Wow. And I think I want to give you my impressions. Then we'll get Sean's. Sean David Morton remains with us as a guest. In the beginning of the interview, in the first, I think, half hour, I sensed that I was getting a kind of a runaround, or that I was not satisfied with the quality of the answers that I was being given. But as the interview progressed, and Victor, to some degree, began to relax, I began to get a different sense, and that was that he was telling me the truth. I think Victor was scared. I think Victor really is scared. And so my judgment of the interview after about the first, maybe 20 minutes, half hour, is that we began to get some real information. It was a significant milestone. There's no question about that in broadcasting. I don't know that this really has been done before. Those are my impressions. So I really think my sense was that we were getting the truth. And I'm going to say one other thing that'll probably get me in trouble, and I hope not with my good friend Whitley Strieber, but I held back during the course of the interview. I have received a whole bunch of faxes and email suggesting that the voice pattern that we were listening to, and I was listening very closely, and I must say I'm in agreement, and I'm not saying it is so, not even beginning to suggest that, but the halting voice pattern with an occasional slight stutter is extremely similar to the real voice pattern of Whitley Strieber. Now, I'm not saying it's Whitley Strieber. As a matter of fact, we can discuss with Sean reasons why it could not be. But it did, in fact, sound very much like Mr. Strieber's voice patterns, Whitley's voice patterns. And Whitley, if you're out there listening, I think you would probably agree with that. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll talk to Whitley and find out. So I'm not saying it was Whitley. I'm simply saying the voices or the voice patterns were very similar. I should also let you know that out there taping this entire interview and now analyzing it is David John Oates, who does reverse speech. Next week, you will hear the results of that analysis, as well as the JonBenet case. So I just thought you might want to know. I didn't want to mention that until now. We'll get back to Sean David Morton in a moment. Those are my initial impressions of the interview. I think we were hearing the real thing. I didn't think that at the beginning, but for the last 75% of the interview, I was quite impressed that we were hearing the real thing. I'm sure you have your own judgment. All right. Now you have my impressions. And again, very simply, I was skeptical in the first 20, 30 minutes of the interview, and then became, as time went on, less skeptical. I agree with those of you who suggest that Whitley Strieber and Victor have similar voice patterns. That doesn't mean it's Whitley Strieber. It does mean they sound alike in a lot of ways. And so, Sean David Morton, here you are once again, my friend.
Oh, my.
It was, what a hell of an interview, huh?
Boy, oh boy, talk about making history on the radio. I was stunned. I mean, as far as I could tell, he answered every question properly, as far as exactly where the locations are, to the, you know, descriptions of the, you know, the transports, the 737s, to the CTS-43s, the retinal scans, the five levels at S4. I mean, you know, some of that I'd have been able to pick up from the UFO lore, maybe. It was, and you were right. The first 15 minutes, he was difficult. He seemed obsessed with the minutiae I think that when you actually started getting into talking more about, I guess, the cosmic significance of all this, and how, and maybe the reason he sounds a little bit like Whitley is because they've had maybe similar experiences as far as actually having a direct connection.
Possible, sure.
With these beings.
All right, now let's talk for a second. I mean, I got a lot of faxes and I held them all back because, just in case it could have been true, I didn't want to have a "this interview is terminated" kind of deal on
right,
me.
Right. Well, the biggest reason behind it not being Whitley is number one, Jeff Broadstreet, who is actually the producer and the director on this thing, I've known for 5 years. And, I mean, I've known him since, well, gosh, 6, 7 years now, going on since 91.
Okay.
And Jeff just wouldn't do that. I mean, it's not the kind of integrity thing that Jeff would be involved in as far as it being Whitley. Because if it's Whitley, then it means this whole thing is a gigantic scam.
Right, and I don't believe that for a second. I know Whitley Strieber personally.
And I don't
We're friends, and he is one of the most honorable, straightforward people I've ever known in my life. Whitley is a real person, and he would no more do that than the man in the moon.
Right.
But I had to make reference to the fact that I did get all of these faxes,
mm-hmm.
and that I also noticed the similarity. There were similarities in voice patterns.
In the words that they used, you're right. I don't think Whitley knows that much about Area 51 is the second thing.
Right.
The third thing is that my partner, Larry Germain, actually called Whitley on behalf of Jeff, and we asked Whitley if he wanted to see the alien interview, and he said no. We tried to set it up so that he could actually be in the in the video.
Well, there's more the audience ought to know, and that is that I considered having Whitley here tonight, and I called Whitley, and he returned my call a couple of days ago,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't really want to, but he said, "Art, if you want me to be there, I'll be there."
Uh-huh.
So I think that also destroys the possibility because he could not have been both. And
well, it's also the video that was actually done with Victor. I mean, they're the actual video. They're not the same body type. It's a different person. Yes, they speak the same, but then both men seem to be very, very exceptionally well educated. They both have had experiences with these creatures that, you know, who knows, would obviously expand the mind somewhat. And maybe make you talk in terms of this sort of awe. I mean, it's certainly not an experience I've had of actually seeing one of these beings up close. But I'm certainly it seems that it obviously has a very, very profound physical effect. The rest of what I thought was the most impressive was not only his intricate knowledge of specifically what was going on out there, but also I think that the sincerity that I heard when we were talking about the greater picture of this, his allusions to the fact that these beings were somehow giving themselves up or giving themselves over to be tested and sort of poked and probed, that there was really no way that we would actually be able to capture or shoot down one of these beings unless they wished it, and that maybe these two creatures that he saw out there are ambassadors of some kind, that maybe they've literally given up or given over their lives in some noble effort to increase the understanding of what's going on. I also thought it was very interesting too that he didn't cop to the usual idea that the beings are Zeta Reticulans or they're from outer space, but instead he went for a much more interesting and more intricate complex that if these beings were from someplace out there, then, logically speaking, that they would come from, you know, thousands of light years away, take some samples, pick up a few people to put in a zoo or whatever and go home, as opposed to these beings literally being indigenous to the history of this planet. They are in every culture, they are in every myth or folklore going back literally to the beginning of time, which means that they are indigenous to here, which leads to an entirely other theory that they are not extraterrestrial, but in fact ultra-terrestrial. That they,
yes,
in fact come from this planet, but from
an alternate dimension, whatever.
Or some people have actually theorized that these beings come from this planet, but in the future. And that they've actually come back now with some sort of message or some kind of warning or to somehow maybe take resources, water, air, human beings, if you will, back to some future time when maybe we've evolved into whatever they are.
Well, I had last night Terrence McKenna on the air, and we were talking a little bit about time travel, and he had one very fascinating answer to a very hard question. And the hard question is, if time travel is possible, where are the time travelers? And Terrence said, thoughtfully, when time travel is invented, they will be here in mass all at once. In other words, you cannot travel in time, in the past, in effect, where there are no roads to travel because there was not yet time travel invented. I thought that a rather interesting answer. At any rate, an alternate dimension, yes, possible. I thought a lot of his answers were really intriguing and well thought out. And it was after we began to back away from the hard evidence kind of questions and gave him a little opportunity to talk about the larger cosmic aspects of all this when he began to relax, and then we began to get some hard details.
Well, either that or Jeff must have gotten a couple of shots of that Bushmill in him, I guess. And you know, he was complaining, hey, they won't let me have a drink, so maybe they gave him a couple of drinks and he loosened up a bit. So it's
maybe that's right. Yes,
it's I mean, just a couple of the interesting things. I mean, for example, when he talked about you know, he talked about the saucers. He talked about S4 having five levels, that it had four underground levels, three of which were apparently for the saucers and for the technology, and that the lower bottom two levels were for the extraterrestrials themselves. The reason I was asking the questions about the offices is because there have been other people that I've spoken to who claim to have been there who say that the offices are actually sort of mounted in the walls, that the walls themselves are very, very thick, and that there are connecting, you know, connecting offices, and that also directly relates to the, and it's sort of strange because you have to go back to the original Bob Lazar interviews. I mean, all the things he said between 89 and 90, which then changed only on one point, and the one point they changed on was his actual physically seeing, apparently on two occasions at the S4 site, these creatures, which he described specifically as moving like puppets or marionettes, their heads bobbled. I mean, had the exact same motion and movement as the creature that I saw in this video, and that on this one occasion, how he originally told it to a Japanese film crew that I have the videotape of, was that he was standing at the far end of a hangar, and one of these creatures was actually being walked along the far end of the hangar by two security personnel and their political officer, this Dennis Mariana guy, who was the fellow who was apparently the thug that was keeping all the various people in line. As a matter of fact, that's the one question I should have asked. I should have asked Victor if he knew this the security person that was running things there. But Lazar specifically described it as it being a horrific experience, that your brain just vapor locks because you don't have a frame of reference to put this thing in.
He seemed to be suggesting that these beings were, in effect, sacrificing themselves so that we might try to understand them or try to understand something about them. In other words, they were literal sacrifices to us.
Yes, and that they had apparently something to tell us, some kind of warning. Gosh, I mean, all these things I'm thinking of now, you know, that he's off the phone, that we should have asked him, but they had some warning for mankind or for humanity.
Well, I didn't ask that because when I asked him about communication, he gave a very interesting answer. He said, look, they had people who claimed to be telepaths there, and the information that came from them, even Victor, considered to be suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously then, anything that Victor knew with regard to what they might have said telepathically would have been literally almost conjecture.
Right.
There was no point in proceeding with that. In other words, there was no vocal communication. The only communication that that there was apparently telepathically, and apparently not very trustworthy.
And the video that he released doesn't have any audio on it. He purposely erased the audio so that the two men in the the two men who were actually in the room
wouldn't be identified.
Right.
Now look, in the photograph that we've got on the website, the photograph of the doctor, Victor said that there was no intentional erasure of his face.
No, there's two doctors. They what the doctors when the doctors step into the video, they pull their surgical masks up. They're wearing surgical masks.
Okay, the picture, the second picture that I've got, Sean, I'm sure you've seen it up there.
Yeah.
It looks like an intentional erasure by some sort of graphics program.
No, he's just one man is one man's wiping the mouth of the creature, and the other one is simply reaching across him. He's simply sort of leaning in. He's leaning into the picture. You're looking at his back as he's leaning into the picture, and what he's doing is that he's looking into the creature's eyes so that you see only his back, which is apparently not illuminated, and he's reaching into his pocket to get a pen light so that he can actually look into the creature's eyes, nose, and mouth.
When is this video going to be available to the general public?
Supposedly within about, I would think, about 2 to 3 weeks now. It was supposed to be released, I think, June 15th. So, and the, you know, the rest of the video is being hosted by Stephen Williams, who played the black Mr. X on the X-Files,
right,
the one that was killed at the end of last season.
Right.
He's hosting the video. The rest of the video is sort of, I guess you would call sort of a thumbnail folklore history of extraterrestrials. It theorizes about creatures that were shot down maybe at Roswell. It talks a little bit about the meeting, the supposed famous meeting of Dwight Eisenhower at Muroc, which is now Edwards Air Force Base, when he was supposedly playing golf and spirited away, and then met with a number of these beings or creatures, that there was a treaty that was signed because we had apparently come up with the microwave technology to shoot their craft out of the air. This later became known as Project Sigma, and that Project Sigma was supposed to be an exchange of knowledge and some sort of technology in exchange for allowing these beings to apparently come and go, and or the theory is that they were supposed to have also been allowed to abduct certain people as long as the people were not harmed, their memories were wiped, and then they were put back where they were found. And that this program supposedly got out of hand as a lot more people were being abducted and probed and implanted because these beings were at the end of some sort of genetic breeding curve, and that they needed human DNA to then crossbreed with their DNA somehow.
I've heard that. And then there are other motivations with regard to our environment, and I want to talk about that when we get back and a lot more. So stay put, Sean. Now you've heard Sean, David Morton's reaction to the interview, as well as mine, and I am very interested in yours, and we will get to it. There are other matters I wish to cover with Sean David Morton. This program will be available as a five-hour tape. You can call now, beginning now, at 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278.
Toll free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is indeed, and I know that it's been a long wait. My book, The Quickening, came out, the first printing came out and sold out in 2 weeks. Psh, gone. It has been, I think, a month since that time. The second printing has arrived and we are prepared to ship immediately. And I did not want to advertise until we were prepared to ship immediately because I get tired of answering, where's my book, where's my book? And so here's the deal, short and simple. You can still get an autographed copy of The Quickening until I say otherwise, and you can get it for immediate shipment right now. Finally, they are here. And I would urge you to continue trying to get through on the number I'm going to give you until you do get through. If it is busy tonight or the wait times are too long, try it tomorrow or Sunday or Monday. And eventually you will make it through. But you will be guaranteed to get a first edition autographed copy of The Quickening if you call 1-800-864-7991. That's 1-800-864-7991 to get a copy of tonight's program. You may call 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. It will be a 5-hour program in total. Back now to Sean David Morton. Sean, the interview we did with Victor is going to be argued about from now until doomsday, if it is his last public appearance, as he suggested it is. People are going to be talking about this and arguing about it forever. So more or less, I would like to leave the subject and move on to a couple of other really important ones. Sean, from every indication I have, every guest that I've had, from Native Americans to prophets like yourself to religious leaders like Father Martin to, and I could go on and on and on, I won't, to the book I have written, The Quickening, it is clear that we are headed toward an event. It is clear that in every area of human endeavor, economic, political, social, environmental, things are rapidly increasing at what I call an exponential rate. I believe that I've documented this in my book. I would like to turn around and ask you, the interviews I've had this week, last night with Mr. McKenna, earlier in the week with Standeo, everybody seems in agreement on the basics of this. Are you? What's coming, Sean?
Well, I'm, you know, I initially, when I started publishing the Delphi newsletter in 93, you know, as I said before, I was the only one that was saying that I didn't think it was going to be so bad, that, as they say, time oft makes fools of prophets, and that for the people that believe that the extreme is going to occur and that nothing is going to occur, I think it's going to, you know, it's going to hit somewhere around in the middle.
All right, many have said 2012 is a key year, and many of the remote viewers are unable to look past 2012.
Well, there might be a reason for that, and the reason for 2012 being so unique, and let me give you the scientific aspect of it.
Sure.
Around, after 1945, when we started testing atomic weapons, one of the things that we noticed was that the electromagnetic field of the planet began to jump and juke rather wildly, so much so that in just the last few years, compasses and electronic equipment for commercial aircraft that used to have to be reset maybe even 5-7 years now have to be reset almost every 30 days because of the unstableness of the electromagnetic field. Now, there's a very rare book that I got my hands on. It was actually a white paper by the military called The Flight of the Key Bird. And specifically what it said in this book was that they took the last of the B-29 bombers. Actually, the only one left was the Enola Gay, which was in the Smithsonian. And they outfitted this thing for an Arctic expedition. And they then began to track the magnetic fields of both the North and South Poles. One of the most interesting things that they found is that the atomic testing on the planet had actually not only began to flux the electromagnetic field of the planet, but also knocked the planet slightly out of kilter. In other words, it's knocked the planet almost slightly off orbit, so that what's happening is that the huge tectonic stresses of the planet are such that the rotation of the planet is counterclockwise, but the precession of the equinoxes, in other words, the top of the planet actually moving around in a circle, is clockwise. And so because these two motions are actually moving in opposite directions, you have massive tectonic strain that's actually being put on the Earth. Add to this the fact that now we've sort of got a tennis shoe and a washing machine kind of effect, where the planet's been knocked slightly off kilter, and their greatest fear was that the electromagnetic north and true north would actually meet, and their projection of this, and this book was from actually from the late 1960s, early 1970s, was that this was going to occur around 2012 to 2013,
mm-hmm.
And that an electromagnetic pole shift would begin to occur, and that the first things that we can expect as a precursor to this happening would be what they call the Schumann resonance of the planet actually jumping. Now, the Schumann resonance is the basic electromagnetic frequency of the Earth, which used to be about 7.83 hertz,
right,
which in just in the last few years has jumped. It is now almost 9.1. And as a matter of fact, last June 22nd was when it jumped to, well, it was about 8.7 or so. And then it jumped to 9.1 last June 22nd, which is one of the things that caused a great deal of the blackouts of electrical systems in the western part of the United States.
They never really did account for why that occurred.
Well, I believe it's because the dynamos and they have to be directly geared into the ground frequency of the planet, because we're running the entire planet on a very harmful artificial electrical system that's geared to 60 cycles. And the reason it's geared to 60 cycles was simply so J.P. Morgan and Thomas Edison could hang a meter on electricity and charge people by the minute for electricity, which is why it was set at 60 cycles, so they could charge people by the minute or per second. If we'd actually gone with Tesla's system, which was actually bringing low-frequency energy at the 6.5 to 7.83 hertz directly up out of the planet, we could have actually lit the entire world with the natural energy inherent in the Earth. And, of course, the famous conversation was, J.P. Morgan said, so, you're telling me any idiot can put an antenna up in his yard and have free power? And, of course, Tesla said, yes, won't that be wonderful? And J.P. Morgan said, well, we've got a nice padded room for you, Mr. Tesla, and send in Mr. Edison. He'll have a way we can make money off this. So the big thing in this report, and this was a military report, had nothing to do with the New Age or anything, it was sort of willy-bully, was that an electromagnetic pole shift was actually possible in 2012 to 2013, and if that were to happen, then that would mean that everything that is connected to a ground wire, which is of course every electrical device we have, would fry. And it had the potential of actually wiping the human mind clean. So talk about actually hitting the reset button.
Wow.
It could actually mess up the electromagnetic engrams in the brain so that you would have like a mass memory loss, literally a complete reset of the human brain.
Wow! What I've never heard this before, but it certainly makes sense.
Think about it. Think about what would happen if the North-South Pole suddenly shifted.
We would be reborn as we stand here.
And what do a lot of these psychics and what do a lot of these remote viewers see? They can't see past 2012. They see people sort of wandering around in sort of a half-in, a half-out kind of state. They don't understand why there's so many people sort of confused and blank.
Well, that would be amazing. We would, in essence, in one instant, be as the total amnesia, and we would be wandering around looking at all of this dead stuff around us, and I refer to electronics, not even beginning to understand what it is, like children.
Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things that I've seen in my progressions ahead approximately 100 years from now, and what I do specifically, was there was a technique that I was taught by my teachers in Nepal that is very much like what we would call past life regression, except for in this case it's a post-life progression. But it's even a step further than that. It's actually a soul transference where you can actually go forward to where your life is approximately 100 years from now and actually sort of change consciousnesses. So that I've actually been to that space about 100 years from now and had a chance to look around and take a look at what the world is like and try to get an idea of what the history was like. And a lot of what they have, the last part of the 20th century, before 2012, to them is kind of a mystery, because apparently we dump most of the world's libraries and we put everything on disk. And because of this electromagnetic flux in the planet, and there's actually a couple of bombs that go off near major cities up in the air, electromagnetic pulses, it virtually wipes out our culture. I mean,
well, we'd have books, but we wouldn't know how to read them.
Indeed. And I'm not saying that happens entirely. I mean, if the electromagnetic pole shift were to happen, you would have, and of course it has happened.
We know it's happened.
150 times, I think, in the last few million years. Just by going down into core samples, we can actually get an exact, an exact dating.
That's right.
Just by the filaments in the iron as to what goes on. My vision of this, from what I see, is that a lot of what's going to happen, I think, is going to begin to happen in September of this year. And the reason I think that 1998, late 97, 98, we're in sort of a two-year cycle now. It's kind of unusual because 1998 is a weird year for a number of reasons. Number one, if you actually study the time coding and prophecies, the sacred geometry inside the Great Pyramid at Giza, it states that the Christ figure, the last one, or you know, who we know of as Jesus Christ, was actually born sometime in September of 2 BC. Now, there's a lot of evidence, actually, that he was born closer to August of 7 BC, but that the actual messianic God force then infused him when he was in 2 BC, which would then explain why Mary and Joseph and Jesus were in such a hurry to get out of Jerusalem and get to Egypt, quite possibly to have Jesus initiated in the Egyptian mysteries. So, literally, September of 1998 is the year 2000, is the beginning of the next age. And it's also weird, too. 1998 is kind of unusual because we're at the end of what I call a seven-year tribulation cycle, that the United States did not really begin in 1776, as everybody believes, but when the Bill of Rights was actually finally adopted and all the colonies agreed to it, that's when the government was actually put in place, and that was September 27th of 1791. So a 200-year cycle of a nation, in other words, you have four opportunities of 50 years to do certain things, and the average lifespan of a nation is about 200 years. And if you don't obey certain laws and codes and do certain things as a society or civilization, there is a judgment that is then placed on that nation, and then it goes through a seven-year tribulation period beginning in the fall of I believe, 1991, moving through that through 1998, the fall of 98, where I think that beginning at the end of this year, you're going to see the first major thing that I'd predicted was an entire series of hurricanes and tornadoes that would hit Florida. Now, you've just seen that big water spout that was just off Miami.
Yes.
And one of my major predictions was is that you would have actually six very, very solid, very heavy hurricanes, all of which would be about 150 miles an hour or over, and that they would pound the coast over and over and over again, and that this hurricane season would actually occur almost 2 months, 2 months earlier than it usually does. And that was the first indication, is that we've got, with the electromagnetic fields of the planet actually shifting, there's also something else that's going on because the hyperbaric pressure of the planet has also changed in a certain way. Some people theorize that this has something to do with the Jupiter effect. Now, I know it seems far away, but when Shoemaker-Levy actually struck Jupiter in 1994, it actually did flux the gravity in the solar system, and the shock wave from the Shoemaker-Levy blast has actually yet to hit the Earth, that it's going to hit us somewhere around 2001 or so. It takes that long for the shock wave to get here, and the theory is that it will cause something called the Jupiter effect, which will cause sulfurication of a lot of water supplies and contaminate a lot of the natural water that's above ground. So another weird thing about 1998, too, is that for the first time in history, is that if you divide 1998 by 3, you come up with the number 666, which I think is unusual. And it being just 2 years before the millennium, I really do think that you're going to see a substantial increase in the collapse of the political and economic system.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Bill Clinton is probably going to try to save his political life from impeachment by escalating the war in Bosnia, Serbia, Herzegovina. And I do think that you're going to have a substantial war between 1998 and about the year 2002 that will be based specifically over Bosnia, Serbia, Herzegovina, that will then bring in what will come to be known as the Islamic Jihad, which is a group of northern African countries, the Islamic countries grouping together. And I also think that the very bad news is that you're going to see a revitalized and belligerent Russia with the death of Boris Yeltsin, and somehow, and I've been saying this for a couple of years, Viktor Zhirinovsky somehow gets in through the back door. It's a trick of the Duma. He somehow takes control. Chermoydin doesn't want to step up, and Zhirinovsky comes in. And this is then leading to an entire series of very interesting dates. And these very interesting dates are correlated directly to not only astrology, but also some very interesting things that are going on biblically as well. One of the, and let me just give you the dates moving through here. The Great Pyramid says that this entire age begins November 30th of 1985, and the specific quote is that powerful spiritual influences will begin to irradiate the enlightened, bringing them closer to spiritual and material perfection, that this would literally be when the force of the creation, or the Christ force, would become physical, and that this physical force would begin to manifest in people becoming more open-minded, in choosing new paths and new directions for their life. And that culminates on February 21st of 1999, and it specifically says that that is when the kingdom of heaven comes to earth. Now, what exactly that means, I'm not sure, but it's the beginning of people coming out of society, forming an entirely, well, a new philosophy, if you will, of technology, of mind, of spirit, and that is truly the beginning of what they call the cleansing of the tabernacle. That there has been a 40-year period from February 21st of 1999 that then leads to the coming of a second messianic figure, and that this second messianic figure, which is symbolized in the Great Pyramid by what they call the Messianic Eve, which is a red granite stone block that sits right at the entrance to the antechamber of the King's Chamber, that this messianic figure comes sometime in around the year 2034. So there's actually it's between 2034 and 2039. The figure is born or incarnates in 2034, and this messianic figure then eventually takes control, apparently as a child, in 2039. And the interesting.
All right, Sean, I'm going to stop you there for a second, and take care of catch up a little bit. We are going to open up the phones after the top of the hour. Again, you're getting just a wealth of material tonight. If you want a copy of this program, you can get it by calling Beginning Now. It's a five-hour program. You can call 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. Absolutely fresh flowers. We'll send out more flowers to the lady of your dreams than anybody else in the entire country. It's that good a deal. Miniature carnations, more than she's ever seen, with a card inside from you, handwritten, with, you know, whatever message you want to send, and your name also handwritten at the bottom. Delivery included by FedEx. You call today, they deliver tomorrow. This is a great service for the procrastinators out there. And you know, it's a lot of times at the last minute you remember, or you happen to look at the calendar, you realize a birthday, an anniversary is upon you, and you've just about missed it. Well, you will not with absolutely fresh flowers. The number is 1-800-562-6438. Now, it's $42.95. That's the price, and tens of thousands of you already know how good a deal this is. The rest of you need to follow on. Give it a try. 1-800-562-6438. You remember the spiritual event that Ed Dames talked about around 2012? The one that he could not define because he could not properly see it? Do you remember Terence McKenna's Time Wave Zero at about 2012? The one he could not look past. The one in which he says there is, in essence, a sort of a rebirth. And now what you're hearing from Sean David Morton. All right, we're going to take a break here, folks, and we'll be back and do an hour and lay heavily into the phones. My book, The Quickening, which I believe documents the process that's kicking all of this off, is now available for immediate shipment. Finally, second printing, autographed copy guaranteed, first edition. The number is 1-800-864-7991. I know I've been getting a lot of messages. I know you've been waiting. Here it is, The Quickening, 1-800-864-7991.
Bell is taking calls on the Wildcard Line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Good morning. I'm just getting absolutely flooded with requests for that number again. So if you want a copy of the program you're hearing now, it will be a five-hour program, obviously. It will include the two-hour segment, the incredible two-hour segment with Victor, and what you're hearing now from Sean David Morton. The number to call, please make note of it, is 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278 as of right now. Back now to Sean David Morton. Sean?
Yes, sir.
Boy, I'll tell you, you gave us some pretty rapid-fire predictions of occurrences there.
Well, I was hoping that people will get the tape and order the newsletter.
You absolutely, of course, may.
Out of respect for all the material that we were presenting tonight and the intensity of what we were going through with Victor, I didn't want to talk about it too much. But there is a complete. Issue 33 of the newsletter, the recent one called "The Alien Invasion," is all about Victor. It has the photographs in it, along with a drawing of the scene itself. But anyway, if you want to order the Delphi Associates newsletter, first let me give the number for people, so if they want to get their pencils out, the number for the Prophecy Research Institute, very slowly, is 310-217-7579.
Say it again. A little of that got clipped. It was 310?
310. That's 310.
Right.
217.
Right.
7579. That's 310-217-7579. You can call the hotline for information. Specifically, the Delphi Associates newsletter. It comes out once a month. It's $50 for a one-year 12-issue subscription. We also have back issues of the newsletter. We have booklets of 12 apiece, volumes 1, 2, and 3. Those are all $20. And we've also got a videotape as well, which is called the Ultimate UFO Video, which has the best of the best of UFO footage from all across the planet, along with quite a few television shows that I produced, like Declassified for the Sci-Fi Channel. It's two solid hours of just kick butt video.
All right.
It's great stuff.
All right.
So Prophecy Research Institute, 310-217-7579. Delphi Associates newsletter is $50. You can mail it to us at 2207 Hermosa Avenue. That's H-E-R-M-O-S-A, 2207 Hermosa Avenue. And that's in Hermosa Beach, California, at 90254.
All right.
That's the newsletter.
All right. Good enough. Let's go to the phones and see what people are saying.
Oh, this is great.
All right. Here we go. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Basically, I'd like to ask Sean. Good morning, Sean.
Hi.
I'd like to ask you, this is kind of off the track a little bit, but what is your opinion about the origin of the Oklahoma City bombing?
Well, it would just be my opinion, but... I was one of the first people to print in the newsletter that there were two blasts that came from the University of Oklahoma. I mean, there's a lot of material in it. Art has had numerous people talking about it. A newspaper called The Spotlight has been running a number of stories. I mean, my opinion of it was that it was somehow an inside job. I think that Timothy McVeigh is probably going to be found not guilty. Specifically because the government is blowing its case, because I think that it was a government sting operation that was designed to infiltrate the militia that basically got out of hand, and they're willing to let McVeigh stand alone as sort of the lone nut in this case, mm-hmm. just so they won't tip their hand as far as their involvement. And there's a body of evidence to support that the FBI knew that the Oklahoma City bombing was happening and also knew that the World Trade Center bombing was happening well in advance and did nothing to stop it.
Well, we know about a number of cases in which the FBI was involved in a sting that either got close to or was in fact executed, not necessarily in Oklahoma, but elsewhere. And so that is an imaginable scenario. But you think they have blown their case?
I believe so, and I think McVeigh's going to walk. And I think the reason he's going to walk is because they've basically decided to let him stand alone as the lone nut, rather than grouping him in with a large group of people, possibly foreign, possibly having to do maybe possibly with the Iraqis and the Iranians. And there's a lot of other evidence to this case that proves that McVeigh.
Okay, but let's delineate here. This is your opinion versus what you have divined.
My opinion. No, okay. Just a personal opinion.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Yes, Sean, from what I've heard, you are obviously a false prophet and a liar, from what I've heard.
Isn't that nice of you, sir? Nice to meet you, too.
Jesus clearly stated that you can't set the time. Only the Father in heaven knows the time of the rapture and the end of the world.
Well,
so
I don't believe in the rapture. I think it's a mythical thing that was perpetrated by the Scofield Bible in the 1800s. So, I mean, we have a difference of opinion right there.
As far as
specific times go, you're absolutely right.
A guy you knew, he actually came back from the dead, wouldn't you want to know what that guy said?
I'm sorry?
Jesus. He's saying if there was a guy who died and came back from the dead, wouldn't you want to know what he said?
Yeah, wouldn't you want to know what he taught? If it actually happened.
If a guy came back from the dead?
Yeah.
You mean today? Not particularly.
You're
if somebody came back from the dead, why would they be any smarter
than
anybody?
Caller.
Yes.
You can have a conversation.
I know this guy's an idiot. Who would
without calling people morons and all the rest of it? We don't need to do that.
One of the smartest people. I used to be a hater of God. I used to be a pagan like this guy. Guess what? Jesus Christ is the smartest person I've ever met in my entire life.
All right, sir. I appreciate the testimony, but not the name calling. Do you want to address this, Sean? He's off the line now. He is representative of what a lot of people will say. They might not be as mean-spirited about it, and you've got to wonder about these so-called Christians who come hurling names and are so mean-spirited. It doesn't seem so Christian to me. But do you want to address the religious side of this, the religious people out there who are saying, Sean Morton, false prophet, liar, blah, blah, blah?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that the reason I print the newsletter in the first place is so that I can have a printed track record of the things that I talk about. And the track record's pretty darn good as far as very specific predictions of time frames and as to what's going on. It's not my job to convince anybody, Art. I'm not trying to convince anybody. I'm not trying to proselytize. I'm not trying to start some sort of, I'm certainly not trying to start some kind of cult or religion. It's just my job to inform. I'm not trying to browbeat anybody or change anybody's mind. I'm just trying to tell them, inform them of the facts available, inform them of what it is I've seen, inform them of the fact that in the past, no matter what our fine, misguided young friend might think, I have a substantial record of being correct, and I've studied.
How substantial?
Right now, the last newsletter is from 2 months ago. We had 19 hits in the same newsletter. Everything from.
Okay, 19 out of.
Let me see. The two I was wrong on was I was wrong about Peru. Specifically, because I saw the hostage situation taking a very bad turn in Peru, and I was wrong about, and I might not actually be wrong yet on this, but I actually thought it was Corey Panzer who was the one that was taken into custody by the Torrance police that was responsible for the Ennis Cosby murder, and it turned out to be Michael, somebody else who was actually involved with Corey Panzer, but it wasn't turned out not to be Corey Panzer. So out of everything that I talked about, those are the only two things that were out of whack. The rest of it was the death of Deng Xiaoping, that cloning would be happening in the United Kingdom first and would become a worldwide issue, the eruption of Mount Popocatépetl, that it would first erupt specifically within the next few months, which it did, and that the first eruption would be rather mild, causing some evacuation, and that there would be another eruption now in about the next 4 months or so, which would then lead to a very, very substantial earthquake in Mexico. So as far as, and unfortunately, when you study specifically the Great Pyramids and you study the timelines that are in the Great Pyramids themselves, tend to contradict in some ways the fundamentalist, what appears to be the fundamentalist Christian line. And in some ways, it confirms it. I think rather spectacularly. It does talk about a Christ figure born in Jerusalem, born in 2 BC, that ushers in a grand new age. It talks about the return of this Christ figure, and it gives a specific date for his birth. It gives a specific date for the return between 2034 and 2039. I mean, the dates are just right there. You just have to you have to understand it. And I went to theology school. I mean, this gentleman...
Well, on behalf of most Christians, I apologize for his his attitude.
Don't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just, once again, I'm not trying to convince anybody, and I'm not trying to...
I understand. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi. I have something to tell you, Art, and I've been trying to tell it all night. We collected a group of teens over here, and we're kind of computer enthusiasts, you could say.
Doing what?
Well, actually, we're really interested in what the Department of the Interior is doing lately, you know, with the Montana people and taking away their lands and stuff. Well, that's what I've heard, anyway. So we've been researching on it, and I think you might be interested in this. We telnetted into a Department of Interior server to get some dial-out numbers so we could access it more securely.
You hacked in other words.
Yeah.
Yeah, so?
So we got a land allocation report in Montana from the BLM, which listed a phone number in D.C. as a reference.
Yes.
So we war-dialed the D.C. number.
Yes.
You know what war-dialing is, right?
Yes.
Okay, and we connected into a system that asked for a pass, and we gave one of the BLM passwords.
Yes.
And it connected through that, and it asked for a document number, so we put in the BLM number, and it said, print out the land acquisition document again, and we said next document, and it started talking about, like the raid on Rancho Santa Fe that they were planning, and I'm not sure what that is. They didn't raid. I thought the people just like committed suicide.
Excuse me, a raid on Rancho Santa Fe?
Yeah, like a weapons charge for like weapons and illegal chemicals.
You mean that was in the planning process?
Yeah, I guess. I wasn't aware that... I thought they went through that.
Have you got printouts of this?
I can send them to you.
That's what I'm suggesting.
Okay, well, hold on. There's some other stuff, too.
Well, that'll do for now. Just send that off to me, sir, and either by snail mail, fax it to me, whatever. If you've really got documents, send them to me. We will post them. First time caller line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, my name's Chris.
Yes, Chris.
And I'm from Victoria, British Columbia.
Yes, sir.
All right, Canadians. How's it going, eh?
Not too bad, eh? We're not that bad with that. Okay, anyway, I was just wondering, considering the messianic figure that would be appearing possibly, do you believe that this so-called figure, which is to arrive, could be a spurious or false messiah, which would arrive before the true Christ? Because I just have a feeling that things are boiling down to some form of a deception and a crisis situation that might come in to usher him in, actually.
Well, just about wondering. Everybody feels something's coming. This is one more angle. Sean?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually... it's very interesting because in the history, how can I explain this? From what I've seen from 100 years from now, in my soul travels there and my projections there, there's a figure that rises up out of Islam that becomes a very powerful figure who's very much worshipped as a messianic figure, uniting Islam together. He's called Jamal, the Beautiful One. At least that's how history records him. Comes out of Iran, specifically Persia, links a lot of the Islamic countries together. There is a conflict between the West and Islam that lasts between, it comes to a head actually the end of next, well, it begins the end of next year and lasts for about 4 years or so, up to about 2002, 2003. There's also, in my opinion, a very false messianic figure, a guy running around calling himself Lord Maitreya. Very specifically, the Tibetan Buddhists talk about Lord Maitreya, but that Lord Maitreya does not come until the year 2489, so it's almost 500 years away. And that there's actually a series of, and this is one of the very interesting things about the prophecies and predictions within the Pyramid at Giza, that it talks about a series of four more messianic figures, that this next 500-year period that we're entering into, from February 21st of 1999 up to 2489, is actually a 500-year age, which is known as the Messianic Age, in which there will be a messianic figure who comes in 2039, takes control in 2039, lives approximately 120 years, and then it's sort of a line of succession that's very much like how they picked the Dalai Lama, that actually the Christ essence will then infuse another candidate or another individual, and that these individuals are then born at the planetary chakra points. So the next one, the last Christ, was born within the chakra point of Giza, specifically near the Great Pyramid. There's six main chakra points on the planet: Lhasa, Tibet, Cairo, Egypt, specifically the Great Pyramid at Giza, Stonehenge, England, Machu Picchu, downtown Los Angeles, which is actually the fifth or throat chakra of the planet, and Osaka, Japan, actually right outside of Osaka in a place called Tenri City. So the Tibetan teachings say that these messianic figures, the next one will be born somewhere near Stonehenge, which is one of the reasons why the crop circles are appearing now. They're sort of a way to prepare the way or show symbolically that this next messianic figure is going to incarnate sometime in between 2034 and 2039, somewhere in Stonehenge and or Ireland, and then we go into a 500-year age of these messiahs, and then another 500 years. And actually, if you even read the book of Revelation, which a lot of people don't bother to do...
I'm actually very familiar with it.
Well, we've got a 1,000 years... We're actually only entering the pre-millennial period. I mean, the true millennium, as you know, it doesn't even start until the year 3000. So we've got a long, long way to go.
And just one more quick question, and that was about the... In order for so-called these prophecies to come to pass and the so-called Antichrist, would there not have to be another temple erected in Jerusalem?
Yes.
And
that's actually the last of the major predictions to happen, is that the Dome of the Rock would somehow have to be destroyed. The Second Temple of Jerusalem would have to be built. The Antichrist would then probably have to find some way to actually use the Ark of the Covenant to power some sort of world computer system. Another interpretation of this, however, is leading us all the way back to Area 51. Area 51 is called Dreamland because it stands for Data Repository and Electronic Amassing Management Land. It's a spy base, and it specifically controls a massive supercomputer in space, which they call the Beast System. And it's called the Beast System because Beast stands for Battle Engagement Area Simulation and Tracking.
All right, hold it right there. The Beast. Good Lord. All right. Again, for my own protection, a lot of people are trying to get hold of this tape. Try throughout the weekend. The number is 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is, and I'm going to give Sean a little preview of what I'm going to ask him here in a moment. This comes from Fred and Mike in Seattle. Art, please ask Sean to describe the new technology he sees coming in the near future. In a moment, we will do exactly that. All right. Let's do exactly what we said we would do. Sean, what do you see in the field of new technology? It's moving at an ever-accelerating rate. Where are we headed technologically?
Well, it's it's kind of an odd question, Art, because, I mean, I know what we're capable of, and because I've seen some of the technology myself and spoken to people that have worked on it, as have you. The question then becomes what's going to be politically feasible for them to release.
Okay, all right.
For example, IBM has already advertised in every major magazine in the world that they are already working on digital teleportation. Literally, they took out two-page ads in most major magazines that said that IBM engineers were now working on a digital teleportation system and it would change the way we think in the future. And if you remember the ads, it had a...
Break that down to English. Digital teleportation. Do you mean breaking down...
matter down into energy, transmitting specifically inorganic matter from one place to another and then reconstructing it.
Inorganic.
It takes a huge amount of memory. It's immensely expensive. It's very difficult, but already the ads in the magazines, if people remember it, had an IBM ad of an older American woman and a Japanese man on either side of the page. It was a big fold-out on the inside cover in the first page. And it said, Irene used to fax recipes for her goulash to her friend Hashimoto in Japan until one day she said, why don't I just teleport you over a batch? Sound outrageous? IBM technicians have recently investigated digital teleportation that will change the way we think and live. IBM ideas from out of the blue. That's already being advertised by IBM. It was in every major, I mean, you know, I don't know how many people were asleep during this, but it was in every major magazine.
I must have been asleep. I never saw it. That's incredible.
I will send you a copy of it.
I'll look forward to that.
Ad. So we have digital teleportation. I interviewed a man in Canada who now has, his name escapes me off the top of my head, who now, he can take these sonic wands and actually point them at a cannonball or any object and actually use sound to levitate an object. No matter how heavy the object is, it takes a few minutes for it to build the mass. I saw a 16-pound cannonball float about a foot off the floor and begin to spin and then shoot up into the ceiling and put a hole in the ceiling as this man actually put these sonic wands to it. The actual increases in technology, we've got men like Victor who are actually coming out of places like Area 51 with alien footage, but what
right.
I'm telling you is that we've also got scientists who are breaking away from the establishment, who realize that we're going through this quickening of mind and spirit, who are taking designs and technology, very, very advanced super technology, and are walking away with it to release it to the rest, to the world.
All right, it's a perfect opening for what I want to say to you now. I want to read this to you, see if you agree with it. Art, this comes from Daryl. I would be willing to bet that we were hearing the real thing, referring now to Victor. There was some halting in his voice delivery, a la Strieber, but given the fact that he was selecting his words carefully and other speech characteristics that were not similar, nope, not Strieber, that was one hell of an interview. Sean is right about the man's level of education. Also, note that his anger, fear, and general emotional expression were appropriate and, I think, genuine. If this was legitimate, we know who runs the show, and it's not us. And if they didn't want him to give this interview, he would not have been able to do so. Do you agree?
No, I don't think they're that powerful. I'm not even sure they're that well organized. And remember, he's gone to great lengths to protect his identity. He's absolutely right. There was a period of chaos at Area 51, primarily because of the public attention that was going on there. They're having to actually move the saucers. Apparently, remember that Area 51 from about 86 on was actually controlled by what appeared to be a private organization. I mean, there were Whack and Hut, which were private controls.
That's right.
They were requesting that the AOE, the office, I'm sorry, the DOE, the Department of Energy, and the Air Force turned their radar off on Wednesday night so they could test something without actually letting the Air Force or anybody else know about it. So, I mean, it was everything is compartmentalized. It's not that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. It's that the fingers on each hand don't even know what another finger is doing. So they compartmentalize the scientists. You have three guys who work in a team. They don't know what at the end of the hall are working on or the people right next to them. They don't eat together. Everything is, it's so insanely compartmentalized that only a very few people know what's going on. But these same men are walking out with technological advances and breakthroughs. I think the things that are going to be introduced to the public obviously massively increase telecommunication systems. I'll tell you what they're working on now. Originally they were working on computers that ran on a type of blue gel. And I think that the space-based computers are actually what they call quantum computers, that they found a way to actually store data on an atomic level. And I wanted to get back our other friend who had the other question. I just wanted to briefly explain for those with apocalyptic visions, here's something that fits directly into it. Dreamland, standing for Data Repository and Electronic Amassing Management, or Establishment Management, specifically is a spy base. The SR programs, like the SR-71 Blackbird and the SR-75 Penetrator, stand for Surveillance and Reconnaissance, and they have a space-based supercomputer that they call the BEAST, which stands for Battle Engagement Area Simulation and Tracking. Their eventual goal is to put chips into either the back of the hand, the forehead, directly behind the ear, or the buttock, and track everything from Humvees to tanks to people on the ground. And I eventually believe that these chips will then be introduced as part of a global positioning system to the rest of the population. Well, gee, that's exactly what the Book of Revelation talks about as far as the mark of the beast, and that the first of the great plagues that comes out happens directly after those people who take that mark. 8 months later, they break out in some sort of skin disease, which looks like leprosy, that I think is because of the power supply actually leaking into the bloodstream of anybody who takes this chip. I mean, you know, if you want something really scary, that's exactly what it is they're doing out there.
God. All right. A lot of phone calls. First time caller line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Yeah, hi. First of all, where is Sean born?
Santa Monica.
Santa Monica. Close to Los Angeles, so you can send into that fifth chakra region. Art has had numerous modern-day prophets on there, from Courtney Brown to Ed Dames to Gordon Michael Scallion, and everybody has their own vision of what's to come. And I'd like to really sort of put you to test here, Sean.
Okay.
Can you give us something very, very specific within the next 6 months?
I'll give you a bunch of specific stuff.
Let's go.
The next one is going to be, and I just predicted this in the newsletter 2 months ago, another eruption of Mount Popocatépetl in Mexico.
That's fairly generic. That's happening now.
Okay, no, but it's specific because I predicted.
It's happening. Give us a date. Give us a date of something very specific.
A date?
Yeah, a date.
Okay, hang on. August, mid to late August, from the 15th to about the 1st of September.
Okay, what's
of August? Mount Popocatépetl. I also think, let me see, hang on. Okay, Mexico City. All right, I'm looking at late September, last 2 weeks of September, but first week of October. It's vague, but a very substantial earthquake above a 6.8 in Mexico City. And also, I'm picking up Japan as well. The very northern island of Japan, there will actually be one of the islands north of Hokkaido will actually submerge due to a quake there, I believe, in the next 6 months.
In the next 6 months.
Let me see what else we can get. This is good. I'm glad you're asking these questions because it helps me focus and get specific. All right. California is actually relatively calm. You can actually look for some... This is interesting. Earthquake activity in Pennsylvania. That's odd.
That is odd.
Northern western regions of Pennsylvania, there are some things that are going to begin to ignite. Not big at first, but towards the end of the year, a 5.2 somewhere in Pennsylvania, and very substantial quakes. Holy smokes. There's something next year. I mean, like I said, I believe that beginning September of this year through 98 is going to be the beginning of the year of hell, and that the United States is going to go through more changes as far as its economic systems and structures. I mean, one of my big ones is I've been saying for the last 2 years that the stock market was going to go to 8,000. and then readjust once it hits 8,000, and that was going to be used as part of a reversal in the money system, because I definitely think that the Federal Reserve System and the Internal Revenue Service within the next year or so are going to begin to unravel. It's part of an 86-year cycle that we're going through, which is actually a cycle of Uranus, but that goes back to astrological cycles.
Okay,
is that enough for you?
Specifically, there
the two biggest events that I see happening.
But there will be an island in Japan submerging.
That submerges.
Okay,
the two biggest earth changes I see specifically are very substantial earthquake in the northern part of Japan and Mexico City, and the biggest news this year is probably going to be this series of six hurricanes that I see pounding Florida one after. I mean, they line up to just pound it one after another. Puerto Rico, the Bahamas, and it's already started. My prediction was that it would start much earlier than the hurricane season usually was. Winds are going to be the biggest problem. We've already had the flooding, but the winds are going to be a very, very substantial problem all throughout the South, and specifically Florida and everything south of Florida.
Okay. All right. Is that specific enough for you, caller?
Well, no. I want to know when the island in Japan will actually submerge. What's the date on that?
An exact date?
Well, I mean, he said basically late August, September.
I'll tell you what I'll do. What I usually do is I put the dates in my newsletter, because the closer that we actually get to an event, the easier it is for me to see. And I know that's kind of...
What can you see now, target date, like a week to 2 weeks?
Caller, that's pinned down within...
Well, he claims to be a prophet.
That is pinned down to within a couple of weeks either way.
So
I mean, come on.
So we're looking at late August, early September.
That's what he said.
Okay, good. So
that's about a three-week area for you for the quake north of Hokkaido, which is up above that.
Okay. Great, thanks, Sean.
And I'll publish it in the newsletter, and then you can, you know, if you subscribe to the newsletter or give a call at 310-217-7579. The reason I publish these in the newsletter and the reason I write a newsletter is because it allows me to, like, for example, if I see a quake happening in 98, the closer we actually get to the event, the more specific I can become.
All right, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Bell. This is Robert in San Joaquin Valley.
Hi.
Hi. Sean, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Robert.
I got a couple of questions, but before my questions, I'd like to quickly mention, because you were talking earlier about the Earth and the slowing down. I heard that in June this year, they're adding another second to the atomic clock, which means it's 20 seconds in the last 24 years that they've added. And then prior to that, they estimate that the Earth didn't slow down 1 second per millennium. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, that's amazing information, but it totally makes sense when you consider the increased wobble of the planet.
Yep.
Yeah, that's incredible. Mr. Bell?
Yes?
I'm holding in my hand something here you've never seen the likes of, sir.
And that would be?
Yeah, it was sent through South America, quietly through Central America. I received it about 2 years ago, and it's supposed to be an authentic Chupacabra Blade Slayer.
Well, the way things are going, send it along. I'm going to need it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Could this be me?
That be you.
My goodness, I didn't know what I would say to you, Art Bell, when I finally ever got in touch with you. I'm so excited.
Where are you?
I am in Michigan, Lawrence, Michigan.
Okay.
My name is Patrick. I listen to you out of 890 out of LS, 1100 out of Cleveland, 1140 out of Virginia.
Okay.
1210 out of Philadelphia.
Oh, okay, okay.
I drive truck at night.
Okay. In other words, do you hear us?
Cool. Oh, yeah.
Good.
I'm so excited. Have you ever heard of Bob Frisell?
That's somehow a familiar name, yeah.
He has a book that's come to me. Somehow, it's called Nothing in This Book is True, but it's exactly how things are.
Yeah, there you are.
Drew, the Flower of Light. Yeah, okay, right.
And yes, he talks about sacred geometry, mentions Linda Moulton Howe, Richard Hoagland, and everyone.
It's a little bit of everybody.
Everything you're saying together.
I'm sorry?
In other words, it pulls it all together, is what you're saying.
It certainly does. I wonder if you could ever get him on as a guest.
It's a good book. It's a lot of fun. I mean,
he sounds like he'd be a good guest. You give me a way to get hold of him, we'll proceed. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Good morning.
This is Lakota's Bear in Anchorage,
yes, sir.
Alaska.
Yes, sir.
I've been noticing that Sean was saying that the 1939 was the when the Christ comes back. I think you're more close to the truth, Mr. Bell.
1939.
Okay. Well, in Zechariah 14, it talks about, like Art's been saying, about the quickening or the tribulation,
yes,
that there's not going to be too many people left in all nations, in Zechariah 14:16. What's your opinion on the asteroids hitting the Earth?
In 2012, I'll give you the scientific facts and I'll give you my opinion. In 2012, there is a meteor which is going to graze the outer edge of the atmosphere. You can call most astronomers and talk to them about it. They're afraid that this meteor is going to, when it grazes the outer atmosphere, actually explode. And if it does that, then you have a whole group of smaller chunks or meteorites that rain down upon the planet. In specifically the prophecies within the pyramid, it does talk about a river of fire occurring in 2012 specifically, that everybody thinks that they've survived holding on to their own ways and their own technology, get literally knocked into the pit or the abyss by this river of fire. The only two meteor strikes that I've seen from a perspective of actually traveling to the future and trying to ask them about their history is that there is a meteor strike sometime in the year 2027, and it's way up, it's near Greenland somewhere. I mean, it's south of Greenland, and this meteor that actually explodes somewhere around late 2012, early 2013, that creates this shower of rocks all across a big chunk of the world. 100 years from now, the population of the planet is approximately 1.8 billion. So that gives you an idea. But by 2050, the entire world is completely rebuilt. And by 2075, it's a wonderful place to live.
All right, Sean, that's a good positive note on which to end things because we're out of time. Give the number for your newsletter again.
Okay, once again, for those of you who wish to subscribe and you want some information, the number is 310, that's 310-217-7579. That's 310-217-7579. The Delphi Associates newsletter is $50 for a one-year 12-issue subscription, and I just want to say, Art, what a pleasure it's been, and I hope all of you out there, may the Lord God be your hope and your power and your shield.
Thank you, my friend. Good night. Sean David Morton. This program, both the earlier portion with the interview, the two-hour interview with Victor, very much unexpected, but that is the nature of radio, and particularly this program. And, of course, now the segment we have done, very provocative, with Sean David Morton, is available as a five-hour tape. Now, the lines are gridlocked, so I would suggest to you that you try throughout the weekend or even into next week until you're able to get through. It is a 24-hour number. It is a five-hour program, and the number is 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278 to get a copy of the program we have just done. Now, one other final plug, because the day has finally arrived. The broader outlook of everything that is going on is contained in a book that poured forth from me like water from a tap. It came so easily. It is a documentation of what we are in the middle of right now. It is called The Quickening. And finally, the second printing of the first edition is available for immediate shipment. That means right now. And I am still autographing copies. Now, I cannot tell you how long that will go on. I can only promise you, if you order now or get it ordered soon, you will get an autographed copy. I will let you know when the old hand gives out on the second edition. So I wouldn't wait. If you want a copy of The Quickening, the 24-hour number is 1-800-864-7991. I'm sorry there's been such a long wait, but just happened. That number again for The Quickening is 1-800-864-7991. Yes, I will be here Sunday with Dreamland. Wait till you hear that one. for tonight. Good night, all.